If a person has already had the COVID infection, then they are all geared up. The T lymphocytes are ready to go, the B lymphocytes are ready to go, and they will strike and pounce while the cells have freshly taken up the vaccine and are producing it. And we must therefore expect much more intense reaction, toxic reactions, or cell destruction resulting from this encounter. So, persons who have already had the COVID infection itself are at increased risk, very clearly, of suffering severe adverse events. At the same time, they can derive no possible benefit from the vaccination.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Wednesday, September 8th, 2021. Thank you for joining me today. Have a very focused show for the most part on something that's been really bugging me around a specific problem that has been admitted to, yet is still being dismissed in a very large way. And even the admission of this problem is a lie. And we're going to go through the actual peer-reviewed studies, the scientific research, and new things coming out today, and combining that with some of the things we just recently found to make a very clear picture of why the risk of myocarditis, the serious risk, and understand that pericarditis is they're usually kind of just called myocarditis. They're different, but they're all including the involving the heart. It's been intentionally, beyond a shadow of a doubt in my mind, obscured from your view. If people don't know that this risk is there, and we're going to get into that today, not only just the facts that show that, but people that are saying, I'm dealing with this now, and I was misinformed about the risks. It's all very clear, and this adds to every other thing we're going to talk about, and we have talked about in this vein. But in general, we have a good show for you today to go over quite a few topics. To start off in the beginning, a little bit of Taliban conversation, as we've been doing. You know, white supremacists, we're being told, are now praising the Taliban, because that completely makes sense. Understanding HIPAA, ADA, and the employment, the Equal Employment Opportunity Act. Now, there's a lot of misunderstanding and confusion, even from my part in some ways, around what these things really do and what they can do and what they mean. And believe that, to understand, there are things right this moment that your government are doing that are violations of these acts, but maybe not exactly what you might have thought. It's important to fully understand what they are and what they actually say, because there are things you can, that these are, there's ways these are being abused as we speak. But the concept of saying that they're not allowed to ask for your vaccination status, at least in the way it's written right now, doesn't actually apply. But there are other things and other ways it's being abused. If you're living in Tennessee right now, interested parties likely already know your injection status. You'll want to hear why that is. All cause severe morbidity is actually revealing the lie of how they played with these numbers. And we're going to talk about that today. We're also going to talk about Palestine versus Israel, a point that we've already made before in regard to why one place is exploding with a problem, yet one of the highest vaccination rates in the world. However, we have Palestine with a dramatically lower problem and one of the lowest vaccination rates, at least in regard to Israel, very clearly. And we can show that there's a little bit of a confusion there and nobody wants to talk about it. And here comes the fact checks that say that's actually not true, except I will literally prove to you that it is absolutely true based on the data that they're showing us. Now, there's also a meta-analysis from, I think it was 14, 15 different studies around natural immunity, which completely vindicates and backs up everything we've been telling you about that very topic. We're also going to talk about forced vaccination, forced militant quarantine, and quarantine digital surveillance in largely regard to Australia. But all this, stay tuned. At the end, we will talk about it all. But to begin, we are going to start off with a couple interesting points that I think you'd want to know about, one of which really I just want to give a shout out to Whitney Webb for getting her channel set up on Super U. And I actually thought, I wasn't aware they were already posting stuff out there, so she's already ahead of the game. So check it out on the Super U channel, Whitney Webb's new Unlimited Hangout channel. Search for Unlimited Hangout, and a lot of great podcasts on there, one with Catherine Austin Fitz, and a lot of great stuff on there. Check out Super U. Make sure you check out Whitney's new channel. Also, keep your eye out for an upcoming 9/11 special that's going to be on Super U. It'll be streaming live, involving the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry and a lot of other great stuff coming your way. So make sure you keep an eye out for that. Next thing I want to tell you before we get into everything else is I will be speaking. I forgot to mention this yesterday. Also at the Knowledge Conference on the 21st. And this is Dabu 7's conference he puts on every year. We were going to do it last year as well, but it ended up being canceled. So make sure you tune in for this. I already have a couple of tickets going to some of my mods. Make sure you try to check it out. It's going to be a sort of a Q&A, just information base. And I think it's important that everybody comes out and shows the world that we're still willing to live our lives. Now, one last thing I wanted to shout out. Funny enough, somebody reminded me of this in the chat, in the Discord before I went live. I wanted to shout this out for everybody to see that there's been a lot of great additions to the part. This is under partners from the homepage on truthclothing.io. There's also a bunch of stuff on their main shop as well. The great shirts, Russian bot, and so on. But just so you know, T-Lab partner page has added a lot of great new stuff in case you want to check it out. This one in particular is brand new. You know, I don't really often shout this out because it's not really what I do. It's, you know, this is helping Truth Clothing grow, and it's also helping T-Lab continue. But nonetheless, I actually think they're pretty cool shirts. So check it out. New stuff for you. Now, starting off with a couple of notes on foreign policy and Taliban, which I'll do right quick. I just wanted to shout out something about something that Sarah Abdallah said today in his tweet, which I guarantee upset a lot of people and probably, you know, even when I shared it, probably bothered them. That's un-American, something like that, right? Here's what she said. The U.S. should never have gone into Afghanistan so far. I don't know who would disagree with that. Just as it never should have invaded Iraq, Libya, Syria, pretty solid so far. Whatever the U.S. empire, wherever the U.S. empire goes, right there, people are thinking America, which what that means is the government. It brings nothing but death, suffering, and destruction. Now, if you disagree with that, then you don't understand history, because that is literally what it has done. Now, you could pretend it's been doing this and helping people and bringing food. But of course, along with that food, it was shipping weapons to rebels and, you know, that kind of stuff. And that's all verified information, by the way. But the bottom line is, this is talking about the government, not the people of this country, not America. The U.S. empire, when she's discussing this, is talking about their foreign policy adventurism, their militarism. That's what she's talking about. And if you can't understand that this is what's happened in Syria, in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Bolivia, in Venezuela, and on and on and on, then you're just not paying attention, because it's very clear. So it's funny, because I guarantee people saw that and said, oh, what un-American. And the problem is that people don't realize that our government is rogue and doesn't care about what you think. They are, in fact, the ones embodying un-American concepts, because you don't have the courage to point out what they're actually doing, right? That's what this is really about. That's what the founding fathers, going back as far as you can, would point out, that it's really about accountability, and they don't have any. And all they tell you is that you should just blindly trust and believe in your government because we're the best. But ultimately, even that concept was stated as un-American verbatim by the founding fathers, that to do so is, in fact, servile. To just basically defend the president at all costs, no matter what, is, in fact, un-American, stated by them, by the founding father, one of them, in fact, themselves. But what's funny is that we forget this stuff. We see this and we get offended. Which really, what should offend you is the fact that people are being hurt on a regular basis with your tax dollars, and you go home and watch TV and eat your McDonald's and watch Walt. You know, not everybody, obviously, everybody here, quite different, but a lot of people out there just like to be apathetic. We need to change. We need to be better. And I think that's what we're all trying to drive right now. And I think the COVID thing has really stirred a lot of people to realize that we've all been allowed to be apathetic. They've allowed and driven us to apathy and the choice to just not care about anything, which is ultimately the same thing. Now, next point, I want to get into Taliban discussion real quickly, just a couple of points. And I want to show you that I find it really interesting. And this is the crossover again, as we're seeing a lot of these in regard to foreign policy, the white supremacy, domestic terrorism, January 6th, COVID attacks, and you know, all of it kind of just coming together in a nice little picture. Now we have, again, sort of like they told you that the somehow ridiculous as it is, that white supremacists that were trying to overthrow the U.S. government were going to work with Iran or work with some other foreign entity, despite the fact that they literally started that sentence by saying white supremacists and are pretending that makes perfect sense. Like, so they're going to challenge their entire ideology just because they don't like the government? Well, sure, that serves the U.S. government's picture, their narrative, their agenda. But is it make any sense? Is it real? So the point is, now they're going, oh, guess what? White supremacists are supporting the Taliban. And that's really what is being stated right now. I mean, here is the CNN statement. White supremacists praise the Taliban takeover So then doesn't that make them not white supremacist? If they're, you know, I mean, sure, it's possible, but it's a ridiculous concept. What they're really saying is people that they're labeling white supremacists are praising the Taliban takeover, and they want that to be an anti-government sentiment because anybody here doing so is suddenly a domestic terrorist. Oh, except for the people over there that are standing up against the government in their local area because they don't like the mandates they did and Biden told them it was okay. Those aren't the terrorist ones, only the anti-government ones over here that Biden doesn't like, right? Just hypocritical, constant. But I also want to show you here, the Taliban announced the formation of a new government of Afghanistan. Shocking, right? The government that the U.S. completely facilitated and absolutely is a part of making happen. But we're pretending like we're kind of fighting them, quasi-fighting them, except momentarily arming them and claiming we're going to support them directly with resources and aid. But then tomorrow they're terrorists and they're bad guys and they're a problem. And oh, it goes back and forth. It's whatever suits the narrative today. But here's the mainstream media. Hardliners get key posts in Taliban. You know, they're playing the role. Taliban announces formation of a caretaker Afghan government. Taliban name ex-Guantanamo detainees and wanted man new caretaker government. It's just utterly ridiculous. And everything happening here from the very beginning of the Taliban to what the U.S. allowed after this to now is part of what the U.S. government has made happen here by action directly and by failure. It doesn't really matter. And it's all right now being played. I mean, I believe all of this right now is some sort of an illusion. Like, again, that doesn't mean it's not real. It means they are the idea that the Taliban somehow just took over and it was allowed to happen and they got all these weapons and everything worked and now there's a new government. And doesn't that, I mean, this might as well be a perfect regime change, except that's not how they're framing it. So just pay attention to the mainstream media because apparently white supremacists are praising the Taliban. Now they're working with bad guys over there and now the white supremacists are going to overthrow the country here and now they're going to attack vaccine infrastructure and they're going to help and it's, you know, it all just falls right into place, doesn't it? As Matt Taibbi points out, which is going to make you laugh out loud, you know, in regard to this story, right? Because apparently these excellent journalists over at CNN have great source material and they're going to let you know that this white supremacist underground operation and the whole U.S. government, they're praising the Taliban. Okay, well, where'd that come from? Apparently, the entire story about an alleged white supremacist praise of the Taliban worrying officials cites exactly one anonymous online quote on Instagram. Let that sink in. But we're the fake news, right? Great job, CNN. You guys are fantastic. By the way, just as bad as Fox News. But jumping over into the HIPAA discussion. That wasn't a bad start, was it? That was 12 minutes. I always want to get that stuff in. I can't help it. But so this is a good place to start on this conversation before we jump right into the myocarditis. Or actually before that, there's some really interesting new studies that show you the severity, the covered up severity of these injections in different ways, which will lead right into the myocarditis discussion. But this is an important conversation because this has been misrepresented by all sides, it would seem. And it's important for us to really understand this, myself included. So starting off on their own website, understand, you know, this is, I checked a lot of this with the Wayback Machine as well to make sure these things weren't altered from before COVID started to now and so on. And these are the same for the most part. HIPAA privacy rule. Now it's HIPAA stands for Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. Now their privacy rule, it states the privacy rule standards address the use and disclosure of individuals' health information, known as protected health information, by entities subject to the privacy rule. Now, see, if you didn't read that last part, it might sound like it's about just disclosing the information. However, and this is what people have stated, and as much as I hate admitting that certain people that are sort of authoritarian sociopaths right now are right in this case, what they're saying is it's about these entities and their ability or them disclosing this. Right. So that's what it says there. These individuals and organizations are called covered entities. So if these covered entities disclose information, then these people are subject to the HIPAA violation of HIPAA. Now, who are the covered entities? Healthcare providers, health plans, insurance, healthcare cleaning houses, business associates. So this clearly does not kind of sweep in your job or a hospital. Right. Well, it could in the context of healthcare provider. Right. So we'll get into that in a second in regard to the way this is being applied now. But the way that they're talking about this just from HIPAA alone, it does not appear that HIPAA itself is applied to, let's say, your job forcing you to take an injection. Right. Or you disclosing more specifically in regard to privacy, whether or not you're vaccinated. Now, that is true in the context of just reading this exactly. However, there's a lot of other rules included in this, in the ADA, in the Equal Employment Opportunity Act, that very clearly state that you're not allowed to disclose publicly this information because that creates discrimination, which we already see happening, as well as the fact that the businesses themselves, even asking this stuff, kind of run foul of the ADA and a few other things. Now, we're going to get into that. But starting off with HIPAA, just realize that this is very specific to these specific covered entities and their use and disclosure of your of health information. And that health information does absolutely apply to things that we're talking about today. Now, going forward, this is under COVID-19 vaccinations and EEO overview, which is the Equal Employment Opportunity overview. Under the ADA, Title 6 or 7, excuse me, and other federal employment and non-discrimination laws an employer require all employees physically entering the workplace to be vaccinated for COVID-19. All right, so that's where we are. So it says, and again, this is coming from their own website, so understand that. It says the federal equal employment opportunity laws do not prevent an employer from requiring all employees physically entering the workplace to be vaccinated for COVID-19, subject to reasonable accommodation provisions of Title VII and the ADA and other EEO considerations discussed below. Now, that's interesting because there's a caveat there. Now, right out of the gate, though, understand that just because they write this, just because the government tells you this, does not therefore make that the case. This is a reality that a lot of people in this country can't really grasp, right? I mean, this is why I often say that just because something is a law doesn't actually make it legal. And that's confusing for a lot of people that don't understand the way this is supposed to work. Governments can pass laws, right? The way this country's has always operated, even though it's obviously not how this is, the government doesn't care. If it's repugnant to the Constitution, it's null and void. That was actually even ruled in a Supreme Court ruling. So if they pass a law that contradicts any right, your first free speech or anything, then it's literally null and void. But the problem is that our government as a whole and a lot of people within the political system don't care about that. So my point being is that just because they say here that you're required or they can do it doesn't then mean that it's actually legal. I mean, we can point to a lot of other precedents and laws, including international law, that very clearly state that that's not okay. And we used to say that before COVID started, right? But now it doesn't matter because danger, that's not actually really there for most people. But going forward, I think I'll make sure this wasn't the link that I was going to go to next. No, okay. That's just that. Oh, that's this one here. Let me double check. Under ADA, an employer require a COVID vaccine for all employers in the workplace, even though we know some employers may not get a vaccine. So provided certain requirements are met under the ADA, an employer may require an individual with a disability to meet the qualification standard applied to all employees. All right, so it gets into the disability discussion. So hold on, let me come back to that. So this says these principles apply if an employee gets the vaccine in the community or from the employer. So just basically saying doesn't regardless of where it's taking place. In some circumstances, Title VII and the ADA require an employer to provide reasonable accommodations for employees who, because of a disability or a sincerely held religious belief, practice, or observance, do not get vaccinated for COVID-19 unless provided an accommodation would pose an undue hardship on the operation of the employer's business. Now, we've talked about this already way back when this first came up. There's two things there. One is obviously, I hate the fact that I almost feel like this was added at some point. So we're going to decide. The reason that's there is because that gives not just the impression, it's how this works. They get to decide. They get to decide whether you're sincerely believing or just using it as an excuse. How in the world do you think they do that? By prying into your life, by asking questions, and then probably deciding what they believe subjectively, regardless of what you actually believe. That just is disgusting. That, by the way, is a violation of other things we're not even going to get into. Religious privacy. I mean, it's just crazy. Crazy where we are right now. But the point is that if you have a religious belief, this very clearly states that you have the ability to say, I don't want that. Doesn't matter what mandate they're pressing on you. Or that, because I'm talking as an employer, right? If your restaurant said you have to get this because the government said we could, you can say, I have a religious exemption. I believe you don't need to have a doctor sign it. That's the point. But then the other part of that is then they can argue that you not doing so would pose an undue hardship on their operation. Therefore, they can supersede that, circumvent that. But here's the point. What they're going to try to say right there is, well, you could get people sick and I have to shut down and lockdowns and it would be bad. Except the fact that, hey, I've got natural immunity. How about that? Right? How about plenty of other examples, such as I have a 0.00008 chance of dying or getting sick, right? these are things that no one, that they're pretending aren't in the context. It's either you're all going to die and it's very serious, or you get the vaccine. And that's not the full picture, as we all know. So I would, I mean, take this to court, argue about an undue hardship and the reality that if you can verifiably show natural immunity, for those that believe that's what's happening today, then you can put that down and say, I am not going to cause any risk to somebody because here's the other information, by the way, which we're going to get into in a, later in the show about the meta-analysis around natural immunity that confirms exactly what we've been saying. In fact, showing you that it's all, like the vast majority of people have incredibly long-lasting, robust, and what's the other word they're asking? What lasting, robust immunity, not just one kind, not just antibodies, memory B, T-cell, right? These are, and this is the full picture, as opposed to the injection that they claim gives you some antibodies for just the spike protein, which, by the way, very clearly, as they admit themselves, does not lead to mucosal immunity, which means they still have to spread it from their nose and they still have the high viral load and they can still have transmission and still catch it. Oh, weird, right? Who could have guessed? But it's exactly what people talked about before we got here. The point is, though, they will try to argue that that undue hardship is because you can get people sick. So you can see that this is still not very defined. And I believe it's that way on purpose. It says, as with, it says the analysis for undue hardship depends on whether the accommodation is for a disability or for a religion, right? So there's differences for sure, because an undue, obviously a disability, I mean, because before COVID-19, this was in the context of clearly somebody in a wheelchair, let's say, who's they're going to say, well, you know, the idea is that you can't do this or you can't do that. And you can argue that it's an undue hardship and other contests. That's more so the ADA. But now we're looking at a very clear example of how this can affect your life. And suddenly your religious exemption doesn't apply. It's so insulting to me that these people can pretend they care about these things up until it benefits them not to. It's disgusting. Now it says, as with any employment policy, employers that have a vaccine requirement may need to respond to allegations that the requirement has a disparate impact on or disproportionately excludes employees based on their race, color, religion, sex, or national origin under Title VII, or age under the Age Discrimination and Employment Act. Now, we all have seen how this has started. Right. I mean, this is even being pointed out by people that support this. They're going, look, guys, you can see that this, I mean, the argument from the beginning has been there's an overrepresented percentage in the African-American community that aren't getting the injection. Right. That's already been acknowledged by basically everybody, whether or not that's even accurate. That's just become the common discussion. Right. So very clearly, you can see that they're being overrepresented in the exclusion, in the passports and the tests and whatever else, because they're not doing it. So now you have a very clear example of how this is clearly having a disparate impact on African-American communities. People of different, I mean, that's obvious. Or how about religion? How about the fact that they're ignoring your religious exemptions? Like there is obvious ways to play, to use this. And this is why this is here. I think they're trying to fine tune and simplify this down to one small thing. So we act like it doesn't apply. I think it very clearly does. Now, here's another part down here. It says to determine if an employee who is not vaccinated due to a disability poses a direct threat in the workplace, an employer must first make an individualized assessment of the employer's present ability to safely perform the essential functionings of the job. The factors that made up this assessment are, one, the duration of the risk, the nature and severity of the potential harm, the likelihood that the potential harm will occur, and the imminence of the potential harm. Now, when you factor those things in, it's obvious you could argue that you're not the risk. The duration of the risk, including natural immunity, including your actually natural risk that they already are telling you you have or really don't have, the nature and severity of the harm, the likely, and by the way, in that point, aren't they all injected? They're claiming they're protected. So what would really be the harm here? Why? What would be the harm? You see, and this is where you get into the ridiculous nature of their argument. But it says that the likelihood of potential harm will occur and the imminence of the potential harm. Now, I think this is an obvious point. It says the determination that a particular employee poses a direct threat should be based on a reasonable medical judgment that relies on the most current medical knowledge about COVID-19. That is huge, because they're ignoring natural immunity. They're ignoring your actual risk instead of giving you an average of every age group, which is ridiculous based on such an obviously different age group severity. It's a choice. But they're not. Are they using the most up-to-date information? Obviously not. They're ignoring all the scientific studies, including the one about myocarditis, natural immunity, all the things we're going to talk about today. Jumping to the next part. This is an article on August 9th. Consider these steps when asking employees about vaccination status. You know what really actually bothers me about this article is it's basically an article about how to not get tripped up by the law. Right? I mean, these are like flout laws, right? Which is sort of like an outlaw, but you're like kind of there, but you're just kind of flouting the law. The point is that these people are like, it's okay that we're sort of skirting, or, you know, oh, just don't ask that one question and then you can get right by the law and force these things on people because that's the right thing to do. Sure sounds like it, doesn't it? Here's what it says. The U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention and many state public health authorities have recently relaxed COVID-19 related safety rules and recommendations for fully vaccinated people. Right, which we're going to get to in a minute, which already Israel's already saying is only if you've got a third booster, which is I told you so, right? That's where we are. It's going to be a third, then the fourth, and the fifth, and whatever it ends up happening, because they're already telling you that's the cycle. So you every 3 months, you're no longer fully vaccinated until you get the next booster. Glad you signed on, aren't you? Now it says, but the highly transmissible Delta variant has caused a surge in cases, prompting the CDC and other agencies to recommend that fully vaccinated people wear masks in certain indoor settings. Crazy. Now, going forward, it says the U.S. Equal Employment, the EEOC, the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, said employees may decline to confirm their vaccination status for reasons that are unrelated to a disability. Okay, this is where it gets into all these together are important. You're including the HIPAA law, the act, in regard to how it applies to disabilities, but it has there's lots of open information that applies to just the rights violations. Now, including with this, it's saying employees may decline to confirm their vaccination status unrelated to disability. Quote, therefore, requesting documentation or other confirmation of vaccination by a third party in the community is not a disability-related inquiry under the ADA, and the ADA's rules about such inquiries do not apply, says the agency. But we're not asking a third party, are we? They're acting like we're getting this from some centralized database. They're asking it for you as you walk in, right? They're whether it's a restaurant or your job, give me your vaccine passport. So that's quite interesting. Confirmation of vaccination by a third party, they're claiming, is not, because it's, you know, the point is it gets into disclosing of personal information. Now it says, quote, so essentially the EEOC said you can ask about vaccination status, but employers should refrain from asking follow-up questions about why an employer did not receive a vaccination. Well, right there. That's everyone's doing that. Everybody. Literally everybody's at, so why not? Or what happened? Why aren't you doing it? Or, I mean, we've talked to people that are acting like they're in at work. I actually know somebody personally who went through this, who are, everybody's in a group asking each other, did you get vaccinated? And with bosses. It's totally normal. Except that's literally a violation of these acts that we're talking about today. That they are at there. It's no longer private. If everybody's openly discussing these things. Now it says such inquiries may elicit disability related information. That's what they're talking about in this one context, about asking these questions could lead to something that could trip them up and get them in trouble. Right. So don't do that. According to the EEOC, and would be subject to the ADA's requirements that questions be job related and consistent with business necessity. But it goes on to say, Rigger noted that employers should check applicable state law, too, which may differ from federal rules and guidelines. Additionally, I mean, can't we stand back and realize that if you have to check the law to make sure you're not running foul, that you may be running the wrong direction? Good God. It says, additionally, if employers are requiring workers to get vaccinated, which is happening right now, they will need to consider reasonable accommodations for employees with disability-related or, again, sincerely held religious objections. This is a point, and this is why they're trying to just ignore this. This is why you have somebody like the Pope and the archdiocese leader, I forget the person's name, openly saying as the church that they won't allow religious exemptions for people in the church, which is just disgusting. So that's probably why that happened. So they can point to that and be like, well, the church don't do it. But who cares? It doesn't make any difference. This is the law they pretend they care about. You are allowed to say, I have a religious objection. I will not take this. And you can't make me. And you have to provide reasonable accommodation. Then, of course, they're going to argue that you create an undue burden. But this is where you get into the actual back and forth of this. And this is why it's important for you to understand this stuff. Under maintain confidentiality, this is where I find one of the most important parts. The EEOC explained that any documentation or other confirmation that employees provide about their vaccination status is considered medical information and must be kept confidential, right? So this information that's spreading around groups in the workplace, having posted documentation that shows people in different categories, having people wear bracelets where they're not vaccinated. These are all violations. Your medical information is being displayed when you have something that displays that you're not vaccinated or injected. It's pretty damn obvious, right? And so regardless of whether they're allowed to mandate this, which, by the way, I don't know why anybody would want to work for a place that does that, although I do know there are people that just don't have a choice with the way their lives have gone and where they're currently at. But the point is that this is a very clear violation that's happening literally everywhere, because it's been generally accepted as, you know, the virtuous thing to do, to basically push and pressure everybody everywhere to get the thing that should be your choice. It says if employers do require proof of vaccination, they should control access to the information and limit its use. Again, obviously that's not happening. It says, moreover, the data could be protected under state law, which it is. Suisse said employers that are subject to the California Consumer Privacy Act, Gavin Newsom should listen up, should be aware that collecting such information likely triggers the law's notice requirements. So employers should ensure that they have issued this notice when collecting vaccine-related information. Okay, if you're in California, if they didn't issue this notice, you have somewhere to work. You have a place to work right there. It says Alexa Miller, an attorney with Fagre Drinker in Florham Park, New Jersey, said the best way to address employee privacy concerns is to communicate that such records will be strictly confidential and will not be used to make employment decisions. Or not at all, and do the exact opposite of that, right? So clearly, they're breaking rules all over the place. No one's going to hold them accountable for it, but you have the right to know this stuff, and you can put it, bring it to a head, pull this up, show them, talk to a lawyer, right? Bring a lawyer with you. Maybe you can't afford that, but I'm sure there's some out there that we only do it pro bono. The point is that if it's supposed to be not used for employment decisions, I think we all see where that's being run afoul right now. Firing people based on not doing so clearly violates this law. Now, under state immunity, and this was again under specifically the Title I and V of the ADA, but under the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Yeah, come on. There we go. Under state immunity, it says a state shall not be immune under the 11th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States from an action in federal or state court of competent jurisdiction for a violation of this chapter. Isn't that quite interesting to start out with in this page, right? So this is telling them, you, that the government, state specifically, or I mean, you could actually interpret that as the state. You know, we call states out there as countries, right? So the point being that your country, at the very least, your governor, is not immune from that action, from legal action, if they violate this act or this chapter. And we're already pointing out plenty of ways they will. And this is the most important part right down here. So the point being is they can't go, oh, we have indemnity, right? Oh, well, this and COVID stuff, and you can't come out. Yes, you can. It goes on to say, in any action, I'm talking about the government, not Pfizer, in any action, which might be the same thing today, any action against a state for a violation of the requirements of this chapter, remedies are available for such a violation to the same extent as such remedies are available for such a violation in an action against any public or private entity other than a state. Meaning you can take action against the government if they violate this act, and they are right now. Overwhelm them, ladies and gentlemen. Take the shot. Obviously, symbolically, in regard to legal action. It says prohibition against retaliation and coercion. Now, here are the things that are most important. Now, I hope you'll read through this. Trust me, there's a lot to get into. But just these two points in regard to this topic. Are they violating these? And do you have a right to do something about it? Retaliation. It says no person shall discriminate against any individual because such individual has opposed any act or practice made unlawful by this chapter, or because such individual made a charge, testified, assisted, or participated in any manner in any investigation, proceeding, or hearing under this chapter. Obviously, we see discrimination happening right in front of us as we speak, right now. They're arguing it's for a good reason, but that doesn't mean anything. I can go kill somebody and say, well, I thought it was for a good reason. That doesn't make it good. The government can do that and say we're just starving to death the entire country of Yemen for freedom. Does that make it a good thing? Clearly not. It's happening right now, and they know this, and they don't care. Under interference, coercion, or intimidation, it says, it shall be unlawful to coerce, intimidate, threaten, or interfere with any individual in the exercise or enjoyment of, or on account of his or her having exercised or enjoyed, or on account of his or her having aided or encouraged any other individual in the exercise or enjoyment of any right granted or protected by this chapter, such as refusing your injection based on religious exemptions. So they are coercing people regardless of that. They don't care about the law. And that needs to be just egregiously obvious. Like they, in every possible way, I just want to include the UNESCO document that I've showed many times, just to kind of really quickly branch that out into an international setting, right? So we're literally talking about coercion and manipulation. Okay, so here's the 2005 Universal Declaration on Bioethics and Human Rights from the UN, of which the United States is a part. And here's what it says under that exact idea. Under under human dignity and human rights, that's the main point. It says very clearly, the interest and welfare of the individual, you, should have priority over the sole interest of science or society. So right now when they go, oh, it's about the better, you know, do it for your neighbor and everybody has to do this because we're all going to die. It doesn't matter. You have the right. Your individual bodily autonomy is more important on an international scale, international law, than their claims to science or society as a whole. But the point that I'm getting at is to consent specifically, where it says the consent of that, if you decide to, where appropriate, should be expressed and may be withdrawn by the person concerned at any time for any reason without disadvantage or prejudice. So not only are they violating U.S. law in a lot of ways other than just these acts, but they're absolutely violating international law. Nobody cares about any of this. I brought this up 1,000 times. But going forward, another point I want to make is, and this is on just a Bloomberg Law article about big tech unleashes vaccine passports as privacy questions loom. Don't you love that? Always do that, like give lip service to but privacy and a bottom paragraph where they go, we care and we're looking into it. And it never becomes a conversation. It says, but the ADA does require employers to keep their workers' vaccination information confidential. Here's the point I was making earlier. So how is it confidential if you have to wear a bracelet? How is it confidential if every employee is openly discussing these things, right? That's something that's supposed to be managed by the employer, right? This is like asking people about their sexual orientation. This is supposed to be illegal, right? Same thing. They are violating this stuff by allowing these things to absolutely flow, but they know they like it because they feel it's coercing people to do what they have decided is right for everyone. It's all politics and it's disgusting because they are knowingly violating things that they pretend they care about. But it says that could stymie the ability to share passport data with third parties. See, here's the problem. Remember, we just talked about how this system's going to work, the international passport system, where they're openly telling you that other countries are going to have open access to all of your personal data to be able to ensure that when you cross countries, that they can make sure that you are vaccinated and it jives with what they're doing and on and on and on. We already talked about this, whether it's talking about Israel or France or anybody else, that's already being shared with other people, whether it's your neighbor or another country. It says the ability to share passport data with third parties could be stymied. Yeah, it's already happening, though. So clearly they don't care. It says, like service providers who may want to assure clients that the workers going to their homes and businesses have gotten their shots. So that's all that matters, right? Making sure that the nod is to whether we can ensure that they have them. How about the fact that you just acknowledged that there's plenty of ways that's already being violated for those that haven't gotten them? But you can see even the article just goes right past that point. It says, and getting workers' consent to disclose their vaccine passports wouldn't eliminate the threat of ADA liability. But you see, they're not even asking for your permission. It says, as courts could view this as a coercive or discriminatory, or as coercive or discriminatory, according to Peter Blank, a Syracuse University law professor who's written books on disability bias. So there's plenty of ground here, guys, to realize there's so many ways that we are being abused. Just like I used to say in foreign policy, it's rampant lawlessness. They don't even care about this stuff and they never have. These are means to an end. If they can throw these laws in your face at a time when they can use it to make themselves look good or to drive you to do something that they would prefer, then they will. But we can't pretend that international law matters while they're literally illegally invading and occupying and bombing countries and acting like it doesn't matter because we can yell the word freedom. It's crazy how obvious this stuff is. Now, finally, I just want to add the point that I've constantly made about the FDA document. I mean, it's insulting that they can state this, and yet we're watching it be the opposite. Now, here's what I found. By the way, I found something you got that for Star in the chat. This will be something you're going to want to clip. This is really interesting. I discovered this just today, and this is actually a really big deal. I don't even know how you can describe this in any other way than they added this after the EU, after the so-called approval, and added EUA into this as, and you'll see what I mean. Explaining it now won't make it, it'll make it confusing. So look at this. This is from June 25th. Okay. Wayback Machine. This is the June 25th update of the FDA document. And just to add, it says basically the same thing today, but the point was still the same even then. It says, what if you decide not to get the injection? Right? That's what we're talking about, right? Your restaurant says you have to do it. Your government, you have to do it if you want to be in the military. Well, FDA says, what if you say no? It says it's your choice to receive or not receive. Well, obviously that's not true, especially if you want to keep your job. But then it says, should you decide not to, it will not change your standard medical care. Obviously that's not true. If we have people and doctors saying we are not going to insure people, or doctors saying we should be able to put you in the back of the line if you don't, but we'll still treat you, but we're going to treat everybody first, regardless of how severe your problem is, because you should have known better and you did the wrong thing. Well, that's ridiculous. I mean, that you are putting your own opinions on somebody, and that violates the Hippocratic Oath. It violates everything they pretend they stand for. But those are bad people. Not all doctors are like that. But the point is, they stated very clearly, it is your choice to receive it. That's it. Not current styles or emergency authorized versions, or they just said it's your choice to receive this injection or not. Pretty damn clear, right? Check this out. Here is, as you can see, well, it's kind of cut off there at the top, August 23rd, 2021. This is the most recent update. Look at what it says. So after the approval was added for the 15s and up, they now say, what if you decide not to get the Comirnaty? Because that's what it's now called. Once they approved it, it's always what it was going to be called. They say it in 2020. It says under the EUA. So why would they add that? Let me finish the sentence. Under the emergency use authorization, it is your choice to receive or not receive the vaccine. By the way, what they just did there was clearly imply that when it's approved, it's not your choice. Are we going to pretend like that wasn't an obvious, conscious decision to add this when it's after the fact? Like, so if the EUA played a factor on whether it was your choice or not, it would have been stated here back when it was actually being used for every injection. Even though it still technically is, because they're not producing the Comirnaty version of it and lying to everybody and pretending it's all approved, even though the new one they're producing is, even though it's the same substance. The point is, they added it after the fact. So in my opinion, you can come to your own conclusions about it. This is their ability, their willingness to add that. So now they can make the act like it always said that and imply that, well, now because it's no longer emergency authorized, you don't have a choice. But so here's where you need to remember that if it says Pfizer BioNTech on the label, it's emergency authorized. If it says Comirnaty, same substance, it's the newly produced substance with a new bottle and new label. And that one, they claim, is approved, which, by the way, you could still say no to. I mean, I've said that from the very beginning, but the argument would be that they have, if you take that one, you have the ability to sue them. There's no indemnity for the approved one, right? So here's what's interesting is they're adding this as to cover that up, in my opinion. I just think that's really obvious, and that it very loudly speaks to the FDA making a choice to manipulate this after the fact, retroactively add something under the illusion that it's always been there so they can push this on people, even though they're currently not even using that one. We know they keep telling you, we don't even have it in supply yet. Right now, it's all the emergency authorized substance that's already out there. And there you go. The point was to continue, they keep telling you, should you decide not to, it will not change your standard medical care. Good God, guys. The level of dishonesty and willful misrepresentation, there's no way you can even factor it in that this was just a mistake or an accident or whatever. That's a conscious choice to add that after they know it's been changed. I mean, good God, how do we not see this? But the Tennessee point, I think, is very, very relevant for the entire country. But specifically, if you're in Tennessee, you might want to pay attention. Fox News investigates, it says, which laws Tennessee may be breaking when it comes to vaccine records. Now, this, by the way, absolutely applies to the HIPAA, ADA, EEOC discussion, Because what we're going to see here is the literal violation of exactly what we just discussed until they got caught. Here it says, 1 week ago, Fox 17 News exposed. By the way, I don't know why this wasn't, I didn't hear about this until somebody threw it in front of me, which just speaks to how controlled the information flow is today. This should be gigantic news. 1 week ago, Fox News exposed a potential privacy breach on the Tennessee Department of Health website. Here is the section where you can request vaccine records. That's when the health department shut that section down with a message that reads, it's under review. Now we take a deeper look at the laws or policies Tennessee could be breaking. Now it says your name, address, and birth date. Here's the actual page. We'll show you in a second. Name, address, birth date. Pretty much all you needed to go on their website and find out someone's vaccination record. Think about that. Wilson County mom, Marissa Pasic, calls it disturbing. She says she was the first Tennesseans to speak out about her private records, her injection records, to speak out about her private vaccine records staying that way. Okay, explaining she learned how easy it's been to access someone's status at a Wilson County School Board meeting. She adds the attorney at the meeting, he said, don't worry about having to full verify vaccination status. We have the ability to look it up and verify it ourselves. She said she was a little taken back about how they were like, oh, we can just look it up. And then she looked, and sure enough, you could. Last week, Fox 17 News brought this to Tennessee Health Commissioner's attention, asked if the state has plans to require more secure verification, you know, like a driver's license, a social security number. Now, DePriest explains, here's the biggest problem right here. We don't know how long this link has been accessible to the general public, and we don't know how many people's records have been accessed, and we don't know who has accessed them. So there needs to be an investigation. Now, AJ DePriest is a concerned resident, apparently, speaking out about this. And he's right, though. He's absolutely right. DePriest showed us how she easily accessed 3 family members' vaccination records with their permission, because she just asked them for purposes of displaying this demonstration, but by typing self in the relationship to request e-box, then typing in her own email address where the records appeared in her inbox. Are we going to pretend that this wasn't a conscious choice? This is about making sure there's a way people can find out. Then you can coerce them. You can hold them accountable. That's what every government aspect in Biden's entire administration has been pushing, that idea. Knock on their doors. Go in there. Ask them why. This is crazy coercion. And that this speaks to everything else they're doing. It says it's not clear if the state violated any HIPAA statutes. Come on. Not clear. Come on, Fox. That's ridiculous. Do your damn due diligence. So I followed back up with the Tennessee Department of Health. Dr. Percy wasn't available, but a spokesperson, Bill Christian, says we are reviewing our processes to ensure rock records are released only to the person it pertains to and released at the request. What a nice political response that means absolutely nothing to what actually happened. Here is the mom speaking out, but I want to play this for you really quickly.
I was very disturbed by this.
A web portal designed to make it easy to get your private vaccination records also makes it pretty easy for anyone else to get them too.
Somebody can sit there and literally access the private immunization records for anyone they want.
Now, ask yourself this. Why is this even something that needs to be there? Are they not giving people these damn cards and every possible opportunity to turn them into digital apps? Why is it even necessary for you to have a login or a place where you can add your data and then get it sent to you? It just seems like an obvious situation that was created in order to allow this to happen. So oops, our bad. Are we going to pretend they're actually going to be held accountable for doing something that everyone's going to, you know, just kind of nod at and be like, yeah, well, it worked for us anyway. They shouldn't have to hide it. Vaccines are good. Right. That's the momentum right there. We know that. That's every mainstream channel is basically pushing that line. Now, what's interesting to me is if you try to load the link right now, this is what comes up. Now, here is what looks, this is the old one, actually, at least the one cited in there. But if I click the link from the most recent aspect of it, it looks like they've updated it and added new things. Now, here's what's interesting. It said they were, you know, reviewing it. Clearly, they realized that there was a problem. So changing it in and of itself is sort of an admission of guilt. But look at what they added. So yes, there's a lot more things to put, but there's no driver's license. There's no social security, last name, first name, middle name, date of birth, gender, address, current email. That's all that's necessary. Your number, your email address, your date of birth, your gender. So yeah, it's a little bit more difficult, but family members could absolutely, people that work with other people, coworkers, people who know each other, they can find this stuff out easy. So the point is, all they really did was add more easy to find personal information. This is still very easy. Oh, hold on, there's actually, okay, no. So again, just name, like she said, just write self or whatever. That's what she did. And they sent it right to her email address. So apparently it's still there. I mean, guys, this is incredible. So again, remembering the point of HIPAA and everything else we just discussed and ADA and EEOC, they are clearly in violation right this moment. They are allowing people to look at other people's information. That's not secure. That's not confidential. Even if they pretend it's an accident, they should be held accountable for this, but they probably won't. And the reality is every single place right now that's creating the context, creating the situation where you have to display this on the way in, wear things if you don't, get tested twice a week if you don't, that is proving, showing people that you are not. That is displaying your status. They all know this. They don't care. Now, reasonably quickly, because I think longer on that than I wanted to, but I think that's really important stuff, guys. I told some people that the myocarditis part would be earlier in the show, so I wanted to try to get through it early. But this is a really alarming study. Now, this is the same group that put out the prions disease study. Now, funny enough, of course, if all the people that love the fact checkers out there, you know, the really intelligent people that simply look up a fact checker and then trust what they tell them to think, because that's really intelligent. Well, if you look up the people that run this place or run these sites, they're going to be like, oh, fake news, because it says so. How about instead of fact-checking what you want or told, but you know, to think about people, how about you look at the study and actually look at what their source material is and research it and find out if you think they did the study correctly instead of listening to what Fox or CNN or Reuters or somebody else says you're supposed to think about this. I just can't get past how stupid, just utterly ignorant that is. Because whether or not you think the person running this or the site itself is up to your standards, that what your being what they tell you you're supposed to think standards are in this context, it's about the data, which is what I've been driving home since the beginning of this. And if you don't know that, if you don't care about looking at it, then you're willfully ignorant. Doesn't mean this absolutely is 100% correct. It means that the data is there for you to look at. Now, that being stated, here's what this finds. And I think this is very compelling. U.S. COVID-19 vaccines proven, according to the study, to cause more harm than good based on pivotal clinical trial data analyzed using the proper scientific endpoint. All cause severe morbidity. And they're right, by the way, that this is now, going forward, it seems to be the more used endpoint as opposed to the things that were used in the trials by Pfizer and everybody else, which as we are beginning to see more and more, were utterly, I mean, every possible negative that you say, you know, not long enough. What was the other word I was looking for there? They cut corners in every possible way. They're ultimately 6 months at best, you could call this, even though the median trial time is about 23 months. That's admitted by them. I mean, it's just so obvious how they jumped through this very quickly and used even the wrong endpoints. That's why we get, oh, it lessens disease to a certain degree. And how do we even verify something like that? Right? Somebody gets sick who had the vaccine, they go, oh, good, so it'll be less now. What you're dealing with right now, it's less than it would have been. Oh, it works so well. Okay, prove that to me. Well, here's the proof, Ryan. Pfizer said it does this. Oh, well, then I'm sold, right? That's what this is. Pfizer tells us this. They have independent studies. They claim they're looking at these things, but people that are in those independent studies are completely tied back to the very groups that are invested in this agenda. Not saying you should dismiss it, but consider that and then look at all the other things that are pointing to the problems. It becomes very obvious here, guys. This is a coordinated effort. Now, again, as I take way too much time, as I just said I wouldn't, here's what the abstract says or the points I want you to read. Well, I'm going to read the beginning of this too, because I found this to be quite compelling, the whole thing, really. But I want those main two highlights are the most important. Three COVID vaccines in the U.S. have been released for sale by the FDA, under EUA, emergency use authorization, based on a clinical trial design employing a surrogate primary endpoint for health, severe infections with COVID-19. Not death, right? The obvious things they pretended this was about, stopping transmission. No, just a little bit less infection, which, by the way, is the perfect recipe for creating variants, which is what all the research showed before this. And we will, in fact, touch on that briefly again today once we get to that point. which I forgot what that was. I was going to click on it, but now I'll come back. We'll come back to that. And it says, this clinical trial design has been proven dangerously misleading. Many fields of medicine, oncology, for example, have abandoned the use of disease-specific endpoints for the primary endpoint of pivotal clinical trials, cancer deaths, for example, and have adopted all-cause mortality or morbidity as the proper scientific endpoint for a clinical trial. Yeah, and they explain quite clearly why, at least in the abstract alone. Pivotal clinical trial data from the three marketed COVID-19 vaccines was reanalyzed using all-cause severe morbidity, a scientific measure of health, as the primary endpoint. That's what the study did. It says, quote, all-cause severe morbidity in the treatment group and control group was calculated by adding all severe events reported in the clinical trials. Severe events included, which is interesting, exactly what they hope people aren't looking at, what they're ignoring. We don't know for sure, right? But this is trials we're talking about, right? So they're not fair, but theirs, but this is the trials and the severe events that they really kept quiet. Severe events included both severe infections with COVID-19 and all other severe adverse events in the treatment arm and control arm, respectively. And this is why it says the analysis gives reduction in severe COVID-19 infections the same weight as adverse events of equivalent severity. And the reason being is it's basically coming to a representation of the overall health variable. And it says results prove that none of the vaccines provide a health benefit, and all pivotal trials show a statistically significant, and you guys know how important that is, increase in, quote, all-cause severe morbidity in the vaccinated group compared to the placebo group. Very interesting. Now, it says the Moderna immunized group suffered over 3,000 more severe events than the control group. Now, it says that actually in this case, the Pfizer data, for some interesting reason, was grossly incomplete, but data provided showed the vaccination group suffered 90 more severe events than the control group. So even when it's incomplete, you can still see the very clear slant on the control group, the vaccinated group being, you know, the control group being much having a higher prevalence of problems. But it says the Pfizer data was grossly, Janssen, it goes on to make the same point. All of these had higher severe events than the control. And it says these findings contrast the manufacturer's inappropriate surrogate endpoints. Janssen claims that their vaccine prevents 6 cases of severe COVID requiring medical attention out of 19,630. Pfizer claims their vaccine prevents 8 cases of severe COVID-19 out of 21,720. Moderna claims its vaccine prevents 30 cases of COVID-19 out of 15,000. Based on this data, it is all but a certainty that mass COVID-19 immunization is hurting the health of the population in general. Scientific principles dictate that the mass immunization of COVID-19 vaccines must be halted immediately because we face a looming vaccine-induced public health catastrophe. Now, I have no doubt this is going to be dismissed as fake news, that the person, anti-science somehow as he's producing a scientific study. You know, these are doctors, by the way, doctors conducting the study. But it's just data for you to look at, do your due diligence on, and recognize how very obviously this correlates with what we're actually seeing as opposed to what they tell us is happening, right? As Spiro points out, so rare it's in the news every day. As Reuters says, the EU now lists rare nerve disorder as possible side effect of AstraZeneca. Gee, every day there's a new thing that was fake news that's now being admitted to. Of course, only on the ones that aren't mRNA, because that's not totally planned. The idea here is that they are continuing to admit things that we were censored for, but the obvious reality is that you can look at Bayer's and see that the reports of this is obviously higher in mRNA, Moderna, Pfizer. But what are we talking about? Rare nerve disorders, things like the discussions we have based on the other study we've talked about, the other prion disease study from the same group. This talks about the increase of things like ALS, Alzheimer's, right? A lot of these nerve, like people that are having seizures and Bell's palsy and different things that are happening. I mean, these are possible issues here. And they are admitting that it is is a side effect of this injection. If you said this on Twitter, not as Reuters, but somebody else, Twitter would call you fake news and censor your account. That's how ridiculous this is. In fact, I just saw an article about a person who was in fact arguing that people who are pushing ivermectin were crazy. You know, the typical nonsensical horse paste BS that we're seeing everywhere. But he was arguing a little more nuanced than some of these ridiculous mainstream ones. But he was taking a stance that it was that they were pushing dangerous things. But because he discussed ivermectin and because he pointed to the Dark Horse podcast and so on, they censored him. They even gave him a strike. And the point is that the guy was on there. They're broken. They broke themselves because they're literally censoring entire conversations right now and acting like it's only fake news. They're just throwing out a broad net and sweeping up everything. Don't care. Do you think that sounds honest? It's incredible to me. Now, finally, the last one is another one from the American Journal of Roentgenology. Interesting. It's funny, you know, I always say this, but it's funny when you read something and then you say it out loud. I was going to look at, I'll do that later. Curious what that is. But, oh, here. Oh, no, I'm going to get the whole thing. Anyway, on this site, Your Medical Imaging Society, it says, idiopathic, ipsilateral, external, jugular vein, thrombophlebitis after coronavirus disease. Similar concept we've already talked about. Just another study, right? Just add it to the pile. This is from 2021. It says, a 55-year-old woman reported having left supraclavicular lump for 2 weeks that manifested 2 days after she received her second dose of the Pfizer biotech injection, meaning it was an emergency authorized one. So damn indemnity. It says the patient also experienced malaise for 1 day and ipsilateral axillary lymphadenopathy. Probably mispronounced that one. For 7 days after the second dose. No side effects occurred after the first dose. Ultrasound showed left external jugular vein thrombus. Now, these are the things we keep talking about. Now, yes, could this be coincidence? Of course it could. But how many times? This is everywhere. Another, as Spiro said, totally rare, but it's reported almost every single day. It says complete blood cell count, coagulation profile. They did all these different things basically to prove conditions had negative findings. They didn't find any of this stuff, is their point. Tested everything. The only thing they could find, it seems to be tied to the injection. It says the CT showed fat stranded adjacent to the thrombus that was consistent with thrombophlebitis or whatever how that's pronounced. That's the one there. This is a specific version of it they're talking about today. The ipsilateral presentation after vaccination suggests an association, though causation is not found, right? Because they're being honest. As I always say, correlation is not causation, but this is valid and enough to when combined with what we're seeing to say that there's obviously a problem. It's incredible to me. Now, getting into the myocarditis discussion, but I want to start off with a quick point here to begin the conversation. Here is Rania Kylik saying, trying to understand why childhood vaccine requirements to go to school are okay, but COVID vaccine requirements are not. During a public health emergency, debates in Global North are so bizarre. Some of you seem oblivious to how lucky you are to have such easy access to vaccines. Right. So much to just, this is not in the intention to point out why she's wildly wrong about 1,000 things, but to make the point about how she is oblivious to the data while she's arguing we're crazy, not crazy, or we're oblivious or whatever for not understanding why it's necessary to require children who are, by the way, at zero risk, according to all the data, including from the people we're supposed to trust, zero risk, and why we're unhappy about requiring this thing for those children. So why don't we actually go through some data so we can educate this person? It says, if you don't want them that badly, feel free to tell your government to stop hoarding and refusing to waive pay. Right. Because that's all it's really about. Hoarding them because the other countries want them. Right. Very, very couched. And that's the argument they're given to make it look like they're inside the COVID discussion. Right. Very well done. But here we go. 100 plus Ontario youth sent to hospital for vaccine related heart problems. No, this isn't based on The Defender, because I'm sure, by the way, I think The Defender is fantastic, does an outstanding job on this topic, but somebody like this is going to say that's a fake news. But we'll get into the studies to back up what we're saying here shortly, as you well know. 100 plus children sent to the hospital for this very serious problem, which we'll make up that point in a moment. A report released last week by Public Health Ontario showed the incidence of heart inflammation following mRNA vaccination was significantly more prevalent in young people. As you know that watch the show, we've already talked about the Lancet study, which I'll point to in a second. The Lancet, right? The people that we're supposed to trust, according to the mainstream media, that very clearly find that these things are not just a, causal relationship, but they're an absolute increase, meaning you have a higher chance of getting this than you normally would if you didn't take the injection. Then I'm going to make the point about why that increase, even a small one, is very dangerous for you. We'll get there. As of August 7th, there, and by the way, just early, make this point out of the gate, this is just one of the verifiable things we're going to point to, myocarditis, right? I could do a 13-hour show pointing out why she doesn't understand why children should not be forced to take this thing from 17 different angles, but we're going to just do myocarditis today for interest of time. As of August 7th, there were 106 incidents of myocarditis and pericarditis in people under the age of 25 in Ontario, slightly more than half the total of all such incidents, the Toronto Sun reported. There were 31 cases in the 12 to 17 age group, 75 cases in 18 to 24. Even according to the meta-analysis of 113 studies of all the infection fatality rate studies, said that under 25, you were at 0.08 risk. I forget. Well, that shouldn't be misquoted. Well, oh, shoot. Now that I'm misremembering, I've been confusing those two, but even that one was the average. You know what? I'm going to skip that. So I'm just thinking it's going to take too much time to find it, but you guys remember, and I'll try to include that after the fact, a meta-analysis of 113 studies about the infection fatality rate of COVID-19. And it found very clearly that under 25, you were at less risk than the flu. Under 10, it was ridiculous, not statistically significant. Neither were, in fact. These people are not at risk. You look at the Oxford calculator, it's even more ridiculous because that shows you specifically and not an average of all the infection fatality rates of all the ages, which is what that is. Even with the average and even being very much higher in the over 60s, they still have a low under flu kind of risk. But the Oxford calculator makes it clear. Under 19 years old, white male, 19 years old, no other issues, no comorbidities. It literally says one in a million. One in a million. Do you realize how ridiculous that is? I mean, I could do this one really quickly. This is valid. This is an important thing to do right quick to make this point as we get into this next discussion. That 19-year-olds, right? These are people that are part, and they understand it gets way less. You can't go lower than 19, probably for a very clear reason. Okay, coming down here, neither, none. None. And you guys should remember this spot. It's all no, just putting no comorbidities, no anything, no problems. Okay. Just like last time, it is literally one in a million. You are 19 years old and you are not, have no other issues. You have a one in a million chance of dying from COVID-19. You have one in just about, one in 50,000, 0.0021, just even getting admitted to the hospital. Right? Okay. So if you go down lower to the type of children that she's pointing to, you know, going to, you know, schools, high schools, down junior high, elementary school, it gets even lower. To insultingly lower, to the point to where you are hurting people with an increased risk of myocarditis for something they don't have, on top of all the other problems, again, that I'm not going to get into. This is just one focal point. It goes on to say, quote, the reporting rate of myocarditis, pericarditis was higher following the second dose of mRNA vaccine than after the first, particularly for those receiving the Moderna vaccine as the second dose of the series, regardless of the product for the first dose. Think about that. Oh, because by the way, they're still mixing and matching all over the place. Right now, the biggest fad is to say, oh, start with an AstraZeneca, then get a Pfizer. It's like we're going into some kind of a, you know, ice cream shop and getting different things on top. It's ridiculous. By the way, the experts have continued to argue, including the main vaccine expert in regard to the UK, said this is crazy. There is no science to back this up. Not only are there different technologies, there's different cooling temperatures, there's different weights between the two, and yet we're arguing to just jam them together, one after the other. His quote directly was they're trying to guess their way out of a problem. But here we are, openly doing it in the UK, because it's about safety. Trust the science, right? Except ignore the scientists. It says, since the start of COVID-19, or started the COVID immunization program in Ontario on December 13th, there have been a total of 314 reports of myocarditis or pericarditis following the receipt of mRNA COVID vaccines. As of August 7th, there had been a total of 202 emergency room visits across all age groups for heart inflammation following vaccination, with 146 leading to hospitalization. Three cases resulted in ICU admission. The report concluded that COVID-19 vaccines continue to be recommended and are highly effective in preventing symptomatic infection and severe outcomes, blah, every time, right? Which is also associated with the risk of myocarditis. That is literally what the report said. Safe and effective, highly effective, totally take it, you should take it, but it comes along with the risk of myocarditis. It says that. So let me make this clear for you as we go forward, why that is so incredibly dangerous. As many of you know, I've already made the point in regard to the previous peer-reviewed study about myocarditis that showed you your risk, even if it's not serious. And yes, I'm going to point that out again today. But first, we're going to show you the current ones, the newer ones. But they're admitting to you that there's a risk, but it's still safe and effective. You still take it, though. Not true. Not based on the admission, not based on the data I'm about to show you here. It should be your choice, is the point. Ontario's Ministry of Health last week said there are only two valid medical exemptions from COVID-19 vaccinations: an allergic reaction to a component of the vaccine, or if you develop myocarditis after the first dose. That's not a joke, guys. The Ontario Ministry of Health said you can't turn this down unless you could prove to me that you have an allergic reaction to one of the things in this vaccine, even though we're keeping it very quiet and not giving you any information about what's really in this thing, or you develop myocarditis. And then we'll go, okay, well, now you can say no. Well, because what? We already got it done? What in the world? I mean, so they know it's a risk, and if you get it, then you can get a pass. I can't even believe that. It says myocarditis is inflammation of the heart muscle that can lead to cardiac arrhythmia and death. According to the most recent data from VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, the primary government-funded system that's co-run by CDC and FDA, which they actively dismiss as if it's fake news, there have been 482 reports of myocarditis and pericarditis in 12 to 17-year-olds, with 474 cases attributed to Pfizer alone. Alone. Why is that being covered up? I think we know why. Why are they pointing to AstraZeneca? Why are they, you know, it's a very obvious reality. It says there have been 4,100 total reports of myocarditis and pericarditis in the age groups, with 3,194 cases attributed to Pfizer, 1,090 attributed to Moderna. It says citing risk of heart inflammation, UK advisory panel will not recommend. And we showed you this the other day. They stood up and said, we're not going to recommend this because there's risks. Yet your government doesn't care. Britain's vaccine advisors last week said they would not recommend vaccination for healthy 12 to 15-year-olds against COVID, preferring a precautionary approach due to the potential for vaccinated teens to develop heart inflammation. This is coming from the UK government. Britain's vaccine advisors, I should say, and then the government backed that up. They are saying you can get heart inflammation. So we don't recommend getting the shots for these kids. Right? I mean, so I hope you're paying attention, Rania, because this is another government that's acting, they're telling you that you're inaccurate. Okay, now on top of that, your government is currently driving this in 100 miles an hour. They are pushing every possible moment to get this in the arms of children. Cuba, which I'll show you in a minute, is already doing it for toddlers. How is it possible that there can be so much air gap between this where UK can say, no, it's dangerous for these kids, admit the inflammation, and your government can act like we don't know for sure? Doesn't that show you everything? Now, I'm not trying to argue that the Britain UK government is somehow doing the right thing or there's whatever. They're all deceiving you for somewhere. And that, by the mind, they're still forcing the injection. They're still keeping you on vaccine passports. They're still keeping lockdowns, masks, everything else. They're all part of this problem. But it says the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunization also said children were at such low risk from the virus, in fact, zero, not statistically significant, according to the Oxford calculator, according to CDC, according to everybody. But of course, even they can only say such low risk from the virus that vaccines would offer only a marginal benefit. You remember when we were saying this and being censored for it? Yeah, good times. Well, another addition to this, one more part from the Telegraph. Parents vow to keep children home during school COVID vaccination campaign. It says it comes after reports that Sajid Javid, I'm not for the health secretary, is planning to push through the rollout of jabs to all 12 to 15-year-olds. Right. So the health secretary is going to do it anyway. This is despite the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunization only recommending the vaccine for higher-risk children. In fact, of course, what the Telegraph chose to leave out, of course they did, is that they thought there was a high risk of the heart inflammation, and that's why they chose that. I wonder why they left that part out, right? So the experts that they hire to tell them what the right thing to do is, you know, trust the science and all that, says, no, we shouldn't do it. Then the government says, well, we're going to do it, though, because that's what we're supposed to do. So what happened to trusting the science? which, by the way, was a joke in the first place because you don't trust science. Science is not a person. It is a method that is to be challenged by the method itself. And they will actively pretend that's not the case until it works with them. And Paskey can say, well, it's always evolving because something changed and now we're wrong before and now we're right today. But 2 days later, it's, oh, well, I don't trust the science. It's settled. It's just so infuriating. So they are ignoring what the experts told them because vaccine's good. Now, here is a study that you might not have seen. On December 13, 2020 to August 7th, 2021. That's comprehensive. That is going back from before to now, before the mass inoculations to now. It is saying myocarditis and pericarditis following vaccination with COVID-19 in Ontario. What it says is quite important. Did I skip it? I think I went right past it. I think I did. Hold on. Shoot. We'll just start from the top. It gets right in there somewhere. I had a spot. I guess I didn't highlight it, I guess. Now it says, starting from the highlights, since the start of COVID-19 immunization program in Ontario, there have been 314 reports of myocarditis. I'm just going to say myocarditis. Of those 204 reports, and this is the one they're referencing, among 204 reports, 80% occurred in males. Oh, you know what? I think that's why I'm just including this because this is the one that they're referencing from this article. So it's for you guys to look through for yourselves. We already went through most of the information. That's right. That's why. I was just confusing myself. Okay, so the next one was the one I'm going to jump into again, or just again reiterate, myocarditis and pericarditis after vaccination for COVID-19, August 4th. And it says, among 2 million individuals receiving at least one dose, 58 women, 57, 76 received it, 52, 44 vaccine, 31. It says, myocarditis occurred in a median of 3.5 days after vaccination. Right. And I mean, just this is valid, confirmed data. These people are developing this after the fact. I just continue to add all this data. We already showed you this one. Now, here's the one I've showed you just recently that I want to include before we get to the most important one. This is from The Lancet. Or excuse me, this one's from the next one. Oh, you know what I did? Yeah, you know, it honestly doesn't even matter because The Lancet I already showed you. I forgot to grab it. I'm not going to waste time getting it right now because that's one I've showed you before. Here's another one that I'm going to add. This is the one I've showed you before, and I've showed you this one before, and we're going to get to those at the end. Safety of BNT162B2, which is supposed to be the self-replicating one that they're not telling people about, mRNA COVID-19 vaccine, self-amplifying. Here's what it says in regard to myocarditis, which I think is very, very relevant, and I found a couple other points in here that I didn't really relay last time. SARS-CoV-2 infection, for those on the podcast, this one is from the New England Journal of Medicine. The Lancet one I was referencing is just the one I've already showed you in the past, which finds the exact same thing, finds that there is an increased risk of myocarditis. It says, SARS-CoV-2 infection was not estimated to have a meaningful effect on the incidence of lymphadenopathy, herpes zoster infection, or appendicitis, but it was estimated to result in a substantial excess risk of myocarditis. Let me read that again. It was estimated to result in a substantial excess risk of myocarditis. SARS-CoV-2 infection was also estimated to substantially increase the risk of several adverse events for which vaccination was not found to increase the risk. You understand what that just said? Not only is it telling you a substantial risk of myocarditis increase, but then it goes on to say that infection after that, so you get the injection, you get myocarditis or whatever else, then you get infected because we clearly see that happening, and that substantially increases the risk of adverse events. You know what that's called? Antibody-dependent enhancement or molecular mimicry or pathogenic priming. We're watching all these things happen. It's right there, New England Journal of Medicine. Now, that could be one explanation. The bottom line is the injection being taken and then getting infected it then causes some more severe risk. We saw the studies that back this up, a 2.4 increase in severity of adverse events. We keep seeing this stuff and they just keep ignoring it. This is why it's so infuriating for people that pretend fake news because they look at a fact check as we're walking you through the peer-reviewed science from the New England Journal of Medicine, from the British Medical Journal, from Nature, from The Lancet. It's infuriating, but it's what we do. We're here to do it for you. It says, including an estimated excess risk of arrhythmia, too, by the way. Arrhythmia, right? Same wheelhouse here, talking about all these things are leading to things that we're talking about, the thrombosis, the strokes, all of this, the VITT, vaccine-induced thrombosis thrombocytopenia. But it goes on to say an estimated increased risk of not just arrhythmia, acute kidney injury, pulmonary embolism, deep vein thrombosis, myocardial infarction, pericarditis, and intracranial hemorrhage. Every one of those things, it is telling you there's an excess risk. How is this not being reported? Because they are consciously ignoring things that point this out. Even from the very trust the science outlets they tell you to listen to. An increased excess risk of myocarditis and all the things we just listed off. Multiple cases of myocarditis after COVID-19 vaccination have recently been reported in the literature. We found that the risk, and by the way, if you look at the literature and the dates, it's been there for a while, as we've been telling you, and they're ignoring it. Make sure you understand that. Just like the CDC pretends we don't know, and yet we're reporting it, and then they grudgingly report it way after the fact, and then we find out they even misled you by using certain dates about the breakthrough cases and about the hospitalization. They're lying. In a constant reality, they're constantly being caught for it, and people just choose not to care. It says, we found, the New England Journal of Medicine found that the risk of myocarditis increased by a factor of 3 after vaccination. You have 3 times the risk of this heart inflammation after you get injected. If you are a child with 0 risk, if you are a 25-year-old with a statistically insignificant risk, you are increasing your danger by taking the thing according to the New England Journal of Medicine, but we'll still be censored for pointing it out. It says another vaccine-related adverse event that has recently received attention in the medical literature is Bell's palsy. Oh, another thing we were censored for talking about. In a recent article based on publicly available data from the biotech and mRNA and Moderna trials, both the mRNA versions, this Onzanoff et al. Study suggested a possible association between these vaccines and Bell's palsy and estimated a rate ratio of approximately 7. This conclusion differed from, shocking, the FDA's briefing on the vaccines in December 2020. Gee, I wonder why. That briefing considered the incidence of Bell's palsy to be similar to the background incidence. Point being, that's not what the New England Journal of Medicine found. Sort of like when anybody seems to fact check the FDA, we seem to find discrepancies. Isn't that weird? Or the CDC? Oops, we made a mistake. Our bad. We'd always be looked at as incompetent than criminal. That's always better for them, right? The FDA found it was just normal, which is what they always keep saying. No, that's about the same incidence of natural occurrence. Well, guess what? They lied to you. Or they were wrong. Either way, there is an increased risk of Bell's palsy. Just like everything else. Right? I mean, I shouldn't say everything else, but just like the other things we're pointing out for you. It says herpes zoster infection, the incidence of which we found to be increased after vaccination, is one of the potential causes of facial nerve paralysis or palsy. Excuse me, herpes zoster, increased risk. Right, these are all the things we keep seeing, and they keep dismissing, and they don't know about the New England Journal of Medicine. There must be anti-science over there, right? Well, let's keep going because it gets worse. Here is another big study. This is from the from Pediatrics. Let's go just show you the top. This is from the AAP, which one was the group? The Journal of American Academy of Pediatrics. That's right. COVID-19 vaccination associated myocarditis in adolescents. Here's what they found. 63 patients with a mean age of 15 years were included. 92 were male, 90% were male, 63 patients. All of them had an mRNA vaccine, and except for one, presented following the second dose. For one. 4 patients had significant dysrhythmia, which, hold on. Dysrhythmia. Oh, oops. That's weird. It doesn't do that sometimes. Some of you may know what this is, but I want to make sure I'm clear on exactly what dysrhythmia is. Abnormality in the physiological rhythm, especially in the activity of the brain or the heart, right? It all seems to be centered around the heart and the blood flow. I mean, it's every single time. But 14% had mild left ventricular dysfunction, which resolved on discharge. 88% met the diagnostic cardiac magnetic resonance for myocarditis. Okay, all but one of these people, 63 patients, average 15-year-old, all but one of them had some sort of problem in regard to heart, brain, blood circulation. I mean, that is disgustingly obvious. 88% literally got diagnosed with myocarditis. How in the world is this not on there unless you realize that they are lying to you, or they just don't care, or they're too dumb to see it? Here's the conclusion. Clinical characteristics and early outcomes are similar between the different pediatric age groups. There is evidence of myocardial inflammation and injury following mRNA vaccinations as seen by CMR. It's just very, very obvious. Now, here's the biggest point. When 88%, in fact, 99% it would seem if you include the other issues, are coming down with some problems in this wheelhouse, here is what I just showed you the other day. And I thought this was so important to make a full segment on, because I just cannot believe how this is being ignored. Now, everything else we just included, the fact that you have a threefold risk of getting this problem, the fact that all this stuff is showing an increased risk and that it's happening. I mean, in this case, it seems like quite a bigger risk than threefold. 88%. That's crazy. But here's what this study from 2012, peer-reviewed study about myocarditis alone. Here's what they found. Specifically, non-fulminant active myocarditis. Now, that means not serious. Okay? Not serious. A not serious case of myocarditis has a mortality rate of 25% to 56% within 3 to 10 years. Okay? I'm going to say that again. Non-serious active myocarditis, of which 88% got in that trial, has a mortality rate of 25 to 56% within 3 to 10 years, owing to progressive heart failure, sudden cardiac death, especially if symptomatic heart failure manifests early on. So when a month goes by and they have a heart attack and they go, oh, well, that was just probably natural. The 25-year-old athlete probably just had a heart attack, and it gets dismissed and not associated. We need to realize what's actually happening here, possibly. Does anybody anywhere know that you have a potentially 56% increase of mortality between 3 to 10 years if you start showing early issues? Or if not, 25 to 56 for non-serious. All these children that get myocarditis and they let them out of the hospital and say, it wasn't that bad. That's what they're talking about. This is mind-blowing that no one's talking about this stuff. Now, already in Cuba, they're injecting toddlers. Kids have a statistical risk of 0% according to every institution that they're telling you to trust, even though you should not trust any of them. Yet here they are, jamming this in their arms, along with all the issues it comes along with. Toddlers. People that, you know, young children that trust people, they trust you, they trust that you're doing the right thing for them. And maybe some of them think they are. But if they don't know better, then they're failing in their job and they're failing in their parenting. Makes me sick. Now, I think I actually missed a part on this. Make sure I didn't. Oh, yeah, I think there was more. See, I missed a part on this one. Going further on the Defender article, which is kind of perfect, actually. It kind of ties back with what I was just talking about. It says, and this is really important. I'm glad I didn't miss this, because this is the lie, right? This is actually the lie that I'm exposing right here with the actual study, that it's not a small risk, which is the way they're trying to frame it. Myocarditis, not a mild adverse reaction. On August 13th, the Defender reported, and it's a great article, by the way, a 14-year-old, previously healthy, 14-year-old, Aiden Joe, developed severe myocarditis after receiving Pfizer's COVID vaccine. Now it says, Aiden's mother said she was aware of the potential side effect, as many pretend that they are, of heart inflammation, but that the Centers for Disease Control said it was very rare and mild. Do we not hear this everywhere? Oh, it's super rare and uncommon. And if it is, it goes away right away. Well, not true. And that's not true based on all the research we're showing you right now. But here's what she says. What they didn't explain is that mild means hospital care, follow-up care indefinitely. Aiden's cardiologist told us, so the expert of the heart told us, no case of myocarditis is mild. That's like saying a heart attack is mild. I mean, this is the problem with where the world is right now, right? We're talking about people in the Twitter sphere and even doctors and experts out there who are yelling people down by saying, you're such a crazy anti-science conspiracy theorist. It's all just mild. It goes away right away. Now, are they lying? Do they not know better? You know, this guy could be wrong too, but I'm showing you the science that backs up what we're saying. It's obviously not mild. And are we really going to pretend like a swelling of the heart muscle, even if a mild case, is actually going to be something you can dismiss as not a big deal? It's unreal. And they just simply talk to the doctor outside of a political context. And sure enough, they're like, there's no such thing as a mild case. It goes on to say on June 22nd, the defender reported an 18-year-old from Arkansas, Isaiah Harris, had a heart attack after receiving the second dose. And of course, they said, oh, we don't know for sure. As always, an 18-year-old, heart attack. Harris was hospitalized for 4 days with acute myocarditis. The doctor said he would have to be total bed rest for 6 months and take medications to numb his heart. Harris had no pre-existing conditions prior to suffering a heart attack. Right, and the myocarditis was just natural, you know, totally natural. After moments, I mean, what was it? Well, after receiving it, doesn't give how quickly it happened, but the defender also reported on a 19-year-old college student who died of heart-related problems after taking the Moderna injection, and a 13-year-old who died in his sleep from heart problems 3 days after taking the Pfizer injection. By the way, guys, all of these you can click on. Look for yourself. I'm not just, these are all there. It's all very easy to look up. So don't just dismiss these things as defender. They're all, the links are there. Dr. Elizabeth Mumper, a pediatrician who has seen many patients experiencing vaccine adverse events in her practice, said she was surprised that some committee members seemed to be making the assumption that the cases of myocarditis and pericarditis would not cause long-term harm. Quote, "We simply do not have the evidence to make COVID vaccine decisions on that assumption, right? But because, you know why they're doing so? Because they've been told it was okay, because the CDC and the government patted you on the head and said, that's the right thing to do. That's not, you go ahead and say the narrative because that's what you're supposed to do. This is a real doctor standing up and saying, we don't know that. We can't just say that because that's what we're supposed to say. It says Mumper said she's worried there will be many more cases of heart inflammation as the vaccine is rolled out to younger and younger children, as we see the UK forcing on people right this moment. It's infuriating. And back to the point again, just to reiterate, here is the scientific research as well as here, right? I mean, this is a current one. I actually didn't highlight the date for this one. This one is August 25th. Telling you there's a threefold increase, right? Does that sound like what they're trying to pretend? A mild thing that's not really super rare? A threefold increase is not super rare. And even then, when you catch it, I don't care if it was 0.001% chance. That's, in fact, a higher chance than they have of catching it if they're under 19. But that 0.001% chance of catching myocarditis or getting myocarditis, even if it's in not severe, could increase your mortality between 25 to 56% within 3 to 10 years. I hope people understand how important and serious this is as they injected into children. As people out there in the pundits of the world are screaming, why can't you guys understand why these things are good for children, right? Why can't we understand? Why don't you understand? It's just like what we did before. Well, no, actually, it's a completely different technology, completely different. It's based on different, completely different styles of the, you know, we're talking about an injection beforehand that produces a reaction based on a either deactivated or live version of the virus that's just not worth enough to hurt you, and it creates antibodies. Now we're talking about inserting mRNA instructions that create things in your body, and then, as we've already proven, that continue to circulate in your blood and continue to produce more, as all of the peer-reviewed studies we've already shown you, which I'm sure she's not even aware of or doesn't care about. But sure, we've already done requirements before. Why do you care now? It's totally the same thing, right? This is medical misinformation. And it's dangerous because people are being gaslit. And whether she knows it or not, or whether any of them know it or not, I'm not trying to pick on her alone. This bothered me today. You're telling people that they're wrong because they are talking about what's actually happening based on the scientific research. Now, another point I want to share really quickly in regard to this weird, right now we've seen people that are, you know, issues that happen on the side of what they want it to be, such as people who potentially die from COVID-19. It's assumed 28 days. We just showed you that. Doesn't even matter. As long as they get tested and we see them die later, we'll say it's COVID-19 for your safety. Right. But on the other side of that, and it's a good example of that, we see them seemingly just acting like it doesn't matter, not telling anybody, pretending like it's not there, or doing both simultaneously, which I'm actually surprised. You'll see what I mean. School district says 3 staff members die in recent weeks. Students shift to virtual learning. Now, for the title readers, the title skimmers that I call them out there, you know, the ones that are buying the narrative and just trusting what mainstream tells them, they would read this and walk away going, I knew it. Oh, they're killing people. Those unvaxxed are out there killing people. That's why they're going back to virtual learning. Well, how about we read the article real quick? It says the Griffin Spalding County School System announced on its website that they would move to virtual learning on Wednesday after three of their transportation staff members, bus drivers, died in recent weeks, causing a disruption to bus operations. Well, still, you go, okay, well, probably they died from unvaxxed, and that's why would they go back to virtual learning if it didn't have to do with the unvaxxed, right? Well, the district did not even say how the transportation staff members died. And if you read the article, it clearly seems not even remotely related. So first question is, why are they going back to virtual learning? Well, their weird sort of argument is because, well, we don't have enough bus drivers now. Like that wasn't completely part of, like, obviously what these people wanted from the first place as they were screaming, we shouldn't be going back to school, right? I mean, this is very weird. But then the other point to make is, what in the world did these bus drivers die from? All in a weird short period of time. What else is being added to the situation? What else are people in this context being forced to take so they don't lose their job? Well, I'll let you think on that one for a minute. But pretty weird, isn't it? Because I guarantee you this is being used as a, you know, probably even being shared by people going, look, see, they're killing people, without even really understanding what the article's about. Interesting. Now, on that note, when we're talking about going back to virtual learning, recognize what that's doing to people. Now, this is just one little blip of one small location, or two locations, in fact, around what's happening because of the lockdowns. Now, here's what it says in Victoria. Now, this isn't very recent. This is from like a month ago, I think, or a couple ago. But same point, still happening today. Deaths in the first 5 months of the year in Victoria due to COVID, zero. Suicide, 276. South Wales, New South Wales, deaths in the first half of the year due to COVID, zero. Due to suicide, 444. And the top title says vulnerable teenagers amid the pandemic. And then at the bottom, it says shadow pandemic, mental health crisis. Yeah, we totally pretend to care about these things and then scream that you have to be on lockdown and then screaming in vaccinations and masks and everything else. But we care about the kids. Get those kids those injections and myocarditis, but we care. This is what's happening with the virtual learning. They don't care about this. This is obscene. 150% plus increase of teen suicide. The pollution, the mask littering. I mean, the mask stuff it's overwhelming the pollution that's happening. Apparently, I actually have this somewhere. I had to put off the mask discussion today because of a bunch of factors. I actually forgot to add it, but I was just going to read this to you really quickly. One of the things I was going to point out in that mask discussion was this graphic that says 129 billion. Masks per month are being used. 3 million masks per minute. But it's just a mask, right? As they clog up the waterways and drown. And, you know, like we used to care so much about the, make sure you cut your soda things, your little soda holders, so they don't get caught on a duck's neck or on a bird, right? What about the mask? I'm sure they're out there cutting the loops of the mask because they're such good people, right? I mean, it is disgusting how this is just ruining everything. The very people that are screaming about climate change and everything else are over there using 35 masks a day. And gloves, because that doesn't help, right? Well, here's what's happening to children. Especially if they are not taking the injection, right? Because this is what they're doing to these kids. And I just had to show this because this boils my blood that this is happening. And by the way, I still can't understand why this is being allowed. Like any parent that's allowing a person to jam that thing up that child's nose as far as this does should be arrested, in my opinion. You don't even need to do this for average people. You can just swab the inside of their nose. Everybody's doing that now, the personal, you know, rapid test, and everyone's just doing their nose real quickly. And yet, here's what's happening to this random child. God, I can't even watch that again. Gosh darn it, that drives me crazy. And we just showed you the video of that child with the bloody nose, right? I mean, I don't even understand how we can pretend this makes sense. Like all these people that were out there screaming about, you know, it's child abuse. I think we all know that. I mean, it's very obvious that this is just absolutely disgusting. Now, I was just going to quickly glance and see if I can find that again, but I doubt I will. But we just played the video that showed the mother filming, I believe it was from a quarantine zone, if I remember correctly, showing her child. Bloody nose, crying, after they jammed this thing up the child's nose. Here it is, actually. I just found it.
Unnecessary. Look at mommy. Look out. Unnecessary to do to children. Disgusting. Hotel quarantine in Australia at right. Live apartments. Terrible.
Yep. Hotel quarantine in Australia. We'll touch on that towards the end. Gosh darn it. I'm sorry, but just have to show that again, guys. It's just wrong in so many ways. But this is what's happening. Even if they're not being forced to be injected, they're jamming this ethylene oxide. I've included this recently in regard to all these sterile equipment things are being treated with ethylene oxide, and there is a residue that's left, according to the own documentation from the company. One time, that shouldn't harm you. But twice a week, twice a day, however many times they're being done, that ethylene oxide does collect in your body, according to the doctor. I've done a show on it. The scientific research does make that claim. So it's not a huge risk, I would argue, but if you do it constantly, it does increase your risk of a lot of things. There's no point in jamming this up to the blood-brain barrier of a child. It doesn't make any sense to me. Now, going back to the point really quickly of the myocarditis, right, and the idea of the increased risk that we're seeing, and what the defender pointed out, right, that the idea that we're seeing this dramatic increase of all these problems, of swelling of the heart, right? I mean, it's not just children. I want to reiterate something about the, as the title of this is called, Fallen Olympians, all the different athletes that are just collapsing in the middle of games. And what do they seem to be? What's the central theme there? Heart problems. What are we thinking this is, guys? Why are they dying? Watch the video for yourself. I'm not going to play it again. I go over the fact that it's just a ridiculous amount of people that they're just ignoring. Here are the ones I just showed you the other day, just to include them. Footy tragedy, footballer dies after suffering cardiac arrest. Why these people, these are all people being forced to be injected or they can't play in these outfits, in these clubs, in these institutions. They just can't. Here's a newer one. Here's Gareth Ike saying, I mean, I doubt it's connected, right? Obviously, you know, insinuating that it's very clear there's something going on. Jets defensive end here saying everybody should get injected. Everybody should. And here he is saying, or the article saying, suddenly he's got a spleen removed, or suddenly he gets a spleen removed after being diagnosed with rare blood disorder. Interesting. Could be nothing, could be everything. Here's an article that I just read. I'll just include for you to read for yourself that does a really good job outlining all this COVID jabs in the case of the collapsing athletes. They list so many in here. I've shown you most of them. Now, finally, I want to play a quick video that somebody sent to me. It's actually unlisted, and this is an Amazon video, so we're not supposed to be seeing this. It's unlisted, and apparently this is a 30-second video that they're forcing their employees to watch over and over and over. I got sent this by somebody who is being forced to do so. So let's take a quick look at this. Let's see. Make sure I didn't lose it again. Lost my place. Oh, that's why. Here we go. Okay. So it's only 30 seconds. So I might play it twice based on what is the points I want to make. But listen closely because he rattles us off really quickly.
We've been examining safety and effectiveness of these vaccines for the last 20 months. 360.
Oh, that's right. I want to start right off with that, right? Did you hear what he just said? We've been studying the safety and efficacy of these things for 20 months. Yeah, in your body. Now, some people might not think that's an important thing to point out, but this is why they keep pretending this was not how this is supposed to go. They're not supposed to be injecting this into people and then finding out whether or not it's safe after the fact, are they? I mean, it's ridiculous, but that's been the case. And we've been telling you that because it tells you right in their own documentation, these trials are ongoing. You are part of that. And the only reason they pretended that was acceptable is because emergency authorization, because we're in so much risk, but we're not though. Let's continue.
3 million doses have gone into the arms of our fellow citizens vaccines for the last 20 months. 360 million doses have gone into the arms of our fellow citizens in the overwhelming number.
And I always point this out. Why is that a valid thing to say? So what? You gave it to a lot of people? We're seeing an onslaught of problems you're dismissing. Just because you give it to people, they keep doing that. Well, look, it's been given to 200 million people, so you should take it too. It's like, so that doesn't prove anything. Especially when you dismiss all the things that we can clearly see are correlated.
Into the arms of our fellow citizens. In the overwhelming number of cases, folks feel fine within 24 hours. They can sleep it off. and the next morning you're going to feel okay and like yourself again.
I don't know why you could pretend that's the fact. As far as I can tell, that is literally the opposite. I don't know anybody who just felt completely normal the next day. Even the people that had mild stuff, mild, you know, headache, whatever, it lasted for quite a while.
For all of you out there that are worried about long-term side effects from the vaccines, it's important to note, we've been vaccinating people for over 200 years.
Again, this is the one that Rania was saying. This is a deception. This is a very clear, intentional sidestep. Do you think this doctor doesn't know that 200 years of vaccination are using different technology? Right? Like that doesn't matter at all. Now we're using a technology that has repeatedly failed in catastrophic ways for the very same reasons of why we're applying this now, the high nanolipid content, lipid nanoparticle content, right? I mean, it's silly that we're pretending like this is not an obvious, everything that's made this problematic before is here now. No one's really explaining why suddenly we succeeded this time. I mean, it's listed in the previous documentation that the success was that they increased the lipid nanoparticles to make sure that the mRNA would get there. But the problem is, when you look even further back, the reason they had so many failures is because of the toxicity of the lipid nanoparticles that led to high adverse events. Yet here we are. And we're seeing high adverse events. And so you pretend that 200 years of something else that has no bearing on the technology we're using means anything is an absolute, this is a dishonest person, or he has no idea what he's talking about. You choose.
No one is reporting the onset of symptoms 6 weeks after getting the shot. It's just not a thing.
Did you hear that? Let's say it again.
Of symptoms 6 weeks after years. No one is reporting the onset of symptoms 6 weeks after getting the shot.
I mean, how can you even get away with saying something like that? Maybe he recorded this 6 months ago, right? I mean, literally as we speak, everybody who, I mean, I was just talking about this with a mainstream group. I saw a mainstream article mention this, that people who are vaccinated right now don't know a vaccinated person who hasn't gotten the infection again. You ask your friends, if you got it again, yeah, I got sick again last week, right? My family right now, the only people out there that have been injected, they both caught it again, right? Both of them. It's ridiculous to pretend that once you get injected, your onset of symptoms are gone, or the fact, whether you're talking about adverse events or catching it again, both of these things have been seen. They're prolific. Here, this Amazon lying to their employees. It's not a surprise.
Unnecessary.
Sorry, that was the wrong one. That was one of the videos. I definitely don't want to watch that again. But going back to the articles, or the tabs, it's just incredible what the kind of misinformation that is. Medical misinformation, right? Now, to make that point even more clear, here's another example of something that we've already been talking about, but Trial Site News does a great job of making this point. Now it says, COVID-19 vaccination quandary. Israel's infection rates continue to shoot up despite mass inoculation, and the contrast between Palestine is being fact-checked right now, but we'll show you that it's valid, totally accurate. But it says COVID-19 data in Israel continues to confound the logic of one of the most heavily vaccinated countries, as it has one of the world's highest infection rates. Right? Nobody seems to want to address that. Nobody seems to want to really dive into the point of how that's possible, except to just try to dismiss, like it's fake news, any real conversation about it. But it says, with CNN data, Trial Site reveals that Israel's infection rate per 100,000 persons equals 12,116. When removing small countries and territories under 1 million persons, Israel has the fifth highest infection rate in the entire world. With a nationwide vaccine program that led key high-risk age groups to near universal injections, vaccinations, this wasn't supposed to happen and should be a wake-up call for health authorities around the world to at least learn more about why this could be the case. Now, remember, that's what they said. And it's the same kind of microcosm of the larger idea that, like, even when they say, well, we need to get 80% of the country injected. Well, what happens when somebody from that other country over there comes over here who wasn't? Well, we got to start all over because he created a variant, right? This is a recipe to create a never ending cycle, which, look at that. Israel's already pointing to that cycle, saying another booster, another variant, another booster. They can claim it's on you. At this point, it doesn't even really matter, because there's no way, whether or not you inject everybody, that this is going to not have a situation in their narrative to create more. Right. But here's what you take it to a small degree, right? Not a country, not a state, but an age group, right? Or how about an age home? You have an age home that's complete. Everybody's vaccinated, every single person, and they still get sick. There's no, you just cannot explain how that makes sense with their narrative, especially from a country level, right? You got places like Malta that had claimed and vocally said, we reached herd immunity way before Delta. And they're struggling right now with Delta. Why? Because the injection doesn't stop any of this stuff. And we've already shown you this, and it's not because of the unvaccinated. It's simply because of how it's gotten here. And the fact that people with natural immunity and people with all these other, all the discussions we've had are far, far better. And that's the scientific research stating that, right? That's important. The key, the peer-reviewed research, which doesn't necessarily mean you should blindly trust it. It just, the point is, that's what they tell you to listen to. It says, a recent piece in Science by Meredith Wadham hammers the point home, titled A Grim Warning from Israel. Vaccination blunts, but does not defeat Delta. Now, we already talked about this article. We've actually recently referenced this. It says, Mrs. Wadman reported 2 weeks ago that Israel experience was sobering and noted that nearly 60% of gravely ill patients are fully vaccinated. I don't know how many times we can keep putting this out there and people keep dismissing it as fake news, right? This is on science.org. Like, this is, again, Science being one of the most highly respected scientific publications. It's right here, very clearly. And this is coming from that doctor. It says nearly 60% of all gravely ill patients, not cases, gravely ill, are fully vaccinated. That one hospital director from Israel was openly stating that 90% of all of his hospital patients are fully vaccinated. Right? Their argument that, of course, because most people are vaccinated, only applies to the argument that it's cases. They're continuing to tell you that it, of course, every time decreases the severity. But how can that be true if 60% of the people in the hospital are fully vaccinated? Nobody cares to answer this stuff. As Trial Site News introduced, a prominent American physician, Eric Topol, which, by the way, Eric Topol has been somebody who's actively been used to bolster the narrative on the side of why this should be, you know, the mainstream narrative. He suggests a vaccine-centric strategy has already led to grossly inadequate results, given the Delta data. Mrs. Waterman's piece conveys the importance of monitoring this country, Israel, as Topol indicates. Quote, it's pure mRNA vaccines. Remember, they're only using Pfizer. That's why Pfizer loves it and uses them. That's why they call them the world's lab. Because those, just like everybody else, even though it's more obvious there, they're an experiment. And that, look at what he says right here. He says it's out there early. It's in Israel, right? It's got a very high level population uptake. It's working. It's a working experimental lab for us to learn from. How do you misunderstand this stuff, guys? This is a mainstream. This guy is part of it. He's telling, this is an experimental lab for us to learn from. The people of Israel is what he's talking about. True, it says, the effectiveness of the mRNA vaccines have waned in half a year. Or you could argue they never really worked to begin with, but that's, you know, that's an opinion. Hence the booster shots. That's why they're pushing them now, because now they've admitted exactly what we were reporting and censored for before they wanted to admit it, that these things are not working. It says, in fact, now the Wall Street Journal reports what we keep telling you, what we told you was going to happen, that we're fully vaccinated now in Israel only means three doses. That's it. We told you in Israel. Is now being vaccinated means three shots. So all those people that grudgingly did it because they wanted to go back to their lives are probably going to blame anybody but themselves, anybody but the government, and say that guy over there who didn't get the injection, that's why. But the bottom line is you fell into the trap. Now you, doesn't matter. Now you're right back in with the other people that refused it from the beginning. How does that make sense to you? As I said, at what point will the government trusters out there start paying attention to how we're calling almost everything? When I mean that, by that, I mean the independent media, almost everything that's happening months, and in some cases a year before they actually happen. And no, we're not psychic. It's just that obvious if you're paying attention. And here we are, right? We told you this would happen. How could we possibly know that? Goes on to say, a recent Israeli study suggests that a rapid fire booster program leads to results. Now, we already reported this to you. That they're already telling you that this is going to be your future. It's not even, it's definitive. They're saying, we are going to have cycles. Your life is now in cycles of lockdowns and boosters. That's what they said. This is, it says that they are dramatically improving the odds of infection, according to the Israeli government. Put another way, those Israelis that received a booster experience, they say 11.4 fewer infections, right? Not transmission stopping, fewer infections than those with two doses. Moreover, a third is associated with more of that, right? This is just what, this is, again, more claim. Now, I'm not even saying that very well could be true. I don't believe it based on what I've already seen. Why would the booster do anything different than the other two that already aren't working? Even when they're early, understand, they keep pretending it's waning. There are people that get injected in the, days, months later, get sick. Right? I mean, the idea, or even get sick and go to the hospital, right? I mean, look at Israel. If you have 60% serious cases, that's not, I mean, that you can't just pretend it's all people that got it way back in the beginning. But getting to the larger point, because this is a point that I've made a lot just before to realize that this is an ongoing problem. They're never going to stop. And that's what they're telling you in Israel right now. But the Palestinian question is an obvious one that just it blows this narrative out of the water. Just so does Sweden. So does a lot of examples that they just pretend aren't happening. It says, and perplexing anomalies catch a trial site news' attention. Trial sites still cannot find an explanation for why the Palestinian territories just next door have such low infection rates. With a pervasive Delta variant-driven surge in Israel, why is a group of overwhelmingly unvaccinated people barely touched? The only Palestinians that are allowed entry into Israel now are the ones fully vaccinated. That's an interesting point, by the way, that nobody's, you know, even more so now they're controlling, like, people, like, the idea that they could ever go back, and they're, anyway, it kills me how much this story is being ignored now because of COVID, even by us half the time. Presently, the new case rate in those territories is at its lowest since the first surge in June 2020. Now, this is valid. I will show you the data directly from the main vaccine update, you know, from Google. But what's interesting here is, what's the difference? The vaccine, obviously. Israel has actively kept this from Palestinians. And as I said from the beginning, it's a blessing in disguise. So is it not very telling that the place that doesn't have this injection, by and large, doesn't seem to have the problem? And the place that has it almost everywhere seems to have a rapidly increasing problem? Again, correlation, causation, but damn it, if that doesn't show you, correlate with the fact that the injection's causing the problem. If you can't at least consider that possibility, then there's more going on in your head that has nothing to do with data. It's about politics and narrative. Now, jumping to the fact check, right? Reuters fact check. COVID-19 cases have been increasing in Israel and Palestine in August. Interesting. Okay, well, maybe they're wrong, right? Let's read what they say. Well, you can read this if you want. This starts off by saying claims that the cases have not increased in Palestine are false. And even more interesting, by the way, they literally say just in August. Because you could argue that they had cases increased before. It'll show you their data. But they're claiming, nope, in August. But here's the point. Just like I always show you, this is some of the most dishonest stuff out there. Even I find this to be more dishonest than the blatant lies. The way that they just very, like, sneakily, nefariously sidestep things by using certain words and certain and omitting certain things. Now, to say it's not increased, that's not what we're saying. No one's saying it hasn't increased. We're saying that it's dramatically less than what Israel's dealing with. You see, but if you can start the premise by saying that, oh, to say it's not increased is fake. Well, that's not, of course, because you could say, well, it went up by one case, so they lied. And that's what they're doing. I'll just jump right to the bottom. Here's the reality. Now, take note real quickly of how similar this will look to what I'm about to show you. A dramatic increase in Israel and a small increase in Palestine. That's what they're going to say. It increased. Here's what they say at the bottom under verdict. Oh, misleading. Which, by the way, is a cowardly way of saying, no, it's not totally not true, right? Like, it's just so funny. You're supposed to be a fact checker, and you're like, well, kind of. Good God. COVID-19 cases have increased in Israel and Palestine in August, a graphic with authentic data, but based on selecting misleading dates, fails to show the uptick. That's not true at all. That's literally not true. Like, they're actually, I don't even know where they're getting that from. Well, let's take a look at the actual data, which, by the way, is exactly what you're going to see right there. Here is Israel. And you can see cases, and then here's deaths. Okay? Seeing them go up quite a bit. And then, by the way, that's the one they're showing right there. That's this. That's that spike. Now, that spike is correlated almost exactly with the increase. You could put the correlation of vaccine uptake along there, and it's damn near exactly the same thing. Okay? Then, here's Palestine. Well, look at that. Well, yeah, sure. Woo, look at that. Cool. Oh my gosh, it went up. It increased, right? So how are they arguing? Like, I mean, that's what this is. It's the same timeline. You can see the small increase. It's right there. I don't understand how they can get away with such blatant misrepresentation. All right, here's the deaths for Palestine. Same, not less, far less, zero, in fact, zero. So ask yourself this. How in the world can Palestine, Gaza, you know, actual occupied Palestine, how could they have zero deaths, one of a seven-day average? How can they have 136 cases at the very most? And that seven-day average, you know, give or take about the same. And Israel has 4,000, oh my gosh, 16,000 new cases in the same time frame. How about deaths? Israel has 51 at the top, 51 deaths in the 29 seven-day average. I mean, that's a dramatic increase on what's happening. And yet Reuters is saying fake news, at the very least, at the very top, saying claims that it have not increased. So all the people that want to read a fact check, like the ignorant people I was referencing in the beginning, all they do is go, oh, fact check. Oh, I knew it. I knew it. They said it's fake, fake, false, fake news. And they send that link to the person that sent them something that has peer-reviewed science in it. Because that's intelligent, right? Well, it's not false, right? I mean, it's very, very clear that you can see exactly the tweet that they're claiming is fake is exactly correct. So the point being is, before I get off my frustration, how can a place that has such a low vaccine uptake have such a dramatically better situation when they're literally sharing borders and people are literally crossing those borders? Nobody cares to explain that in the mainstream narrative because it challenges their world. Just frustrating. Going even more so, and this just reiterates the point I made before, not even done with a third booster. That's not even a month, a little more than a month, I think, since they've really started giving the booster, and they're already implying number four, as I already pointed out to you. That was the show from 2 days ago. Booster number four, already here, and implying number five, as we talked about, the variant-focused injections, right? Which, by the way, how are we going to pretend a variant-focused injection that comes out 2-3 months from now is even going to be valid, as we're already seeing Mu and Lambda and all these different whatever the next Greek alphabet letter is, and they're all over the place. But I guarantee they're going to force it onto your master passport list. It says, and thinking about this and the waning of the vaccines and the antibodies, it seems there every few months, this is a quote from the Israeli government, it could be once a year or 5 or 6 months, we'll need another shot. That's it. That's a statement, a fact. And he keeps telling everybody this. So rather than any questioning of a vaccine-centric only strategy, the waning early stage vaccine products and variants such as Delta, this novel vaccine marketer suggests all Israeli society simply line up for an ongoing progression of mRNA vaccine injections, while meanwhile just absolutely overtly and ignorantly ignoring the potential of natural immunity. Doesn't even factor in. In fact, on top of the fact that that's increasing their risk when you do so. It says, in fact, by the way, do you think you think for a moment that might some reason be why that's increasing? Because they had natural immunity and you're jamming it in everyone's arms and it's increasing? Yeah, just maybe. That's backed up by all the peer-reviewed science we keep showing you. In fact, it says Zachary even expects specialized jabs covering the various variants. All of them. Why not? Come on, get your 17 COVID shots today for all the different variants. The monetization potential for pharmaceutical companies boggles the mind. Already, Pfizer's projected to generate $33 billion for their philanthropy, right? In their first full year of injection sales. Which, by the way, is coming out of your tax dollars, whether you realize it or not. This staggers the mind as most pharmaceutical companies don't have that kind of revenue in a year with all their other products. Think about that. Well, the Defender points out a great point that we've also already made, which I want to reiterate. This is actually from last month, but this is an important point to make. Just a couple quick ones about how the CDC manipulated data, lied to you to create the pandemic of the unvaxxed narrative, which is what this is, right? They're trying to claim to you claim that you are the problem. That it's the unvaccinated. They're the ones doing it. And here's the data to back it up. Remember, everyone said, oh, slam dunk. We knew it. You're all the problem. 99.1%. And if you remember correctly, what did I say when they did that? Show me the data. I said, where is it? Let me see it. I didn't say it was fake. I said, based on what I'm seeing it, that's most likely not real, my opinion, but give me the data and I'll report on it. Here we are. And I told you when I finally got the data, I was one of the early ones to say, oh, there it is. They reported from the first half of the year, knowing that was when most people were unvaccinated. It was a conscious choice, and they lied to you, because if you were to use the actual data, as Israel was showing, it was almost predominantly the vaccinated that were having problems, and they know that. If you can see that, understand that's what they did, a conscious choice, that they were like, we need to lie about this. It's pretty obvious. Now, it says, according to the Centers for Disease Control, the White House, and most mainstream media outlets, what we have now is a pandemic of the unvaccinated, with 95%, 99% of the COVID-related hospitalizations and deaths being attributed to the unvaccinated, right? We all heard that. To achieve that statistic, though, the CDC included hospitalization and mortality data from January through June. The vast majority of the U.S. population at that time was unvaccinated. Pretty obvious. Now, it says, natural immunity offers robust protection against all variants. And we keep talking about this. Actually, I should have grabbed that. I forgot. I always just grab that tweet. Just because it's easy. But the study is in the link there. I've gone over this more than once. There's the study link right there. The Science Magazine, another highly respected scientific publication, tells you that plasma blood from people who recovered from COVID-19 from 22 different infected people found that their blood contained 4 antibodies that are extremely potent against 23 different variants, including the variants of concern, so several of them that they're talking about, the ones they're pointing to. Read the study. It's unbelievably clear. So that's why they're telling you your natural immunity, if you're that half of the country that even the CDC admits most likely have over 160 million of them, far more now because they stated that back months and months ago, you have natural immunity, though they tell you, according to their narrative, that they're sort of like counteracting on the other side. It's confusing as hell that you're good against most of these variants, whereas vaccine induced immunity can't. And the reason for this is because when you recover from the natural infection, you have both antibodies and T cells, memory B as well, against all parts of the virus, not just the spike protein. According to Dr. Anthony Fauci, though, the Delta variant is more transmissible and more dangerous than the original virus and previous variants. However, literally all of the real world data shows it's actually weaker and far less dangerous, even though it may be easily more transmissible, which is exactly why it shows you, like, you could point to the decrease in general and act like we're going, but the point is that it's just a lesser problem, but it's predominantly in the vaccinated right now. And that's all being shown by everything we're pointing out. Now, including that, this is the point I was going to grab a moment ago. I already showed you this article in my previous discussion, along with that imperfect vaccinations lead to higher transmissibility. And as always, of course, I can't help myself if I'm going to mention it. Put it for you, as always, because seemingly, this is what's funny is everybody's always, some people are always like, you have so many links, I can't find anything. And it's like, really, that's your complaint? Like, nobody does this except, I think James Corbett and a few others are the only people, and I emulate him in this regard, actually provide all the source material. That should be a bonus, even if it's hard to find. You should understand that. But imperfect vaccination can enhance the transmission of highly virulent pathogens, right? Vaccines that keep hosts alive, like the ones right now, they're just basically being injected, but allowing it to still transmit, increase the problem, allow virulent strains to circulate, right? This is the other one that I pointed out during that coverage. Vaccines are pushing pathogens to evolve. Just as antibiotics breed resistance in bacteria, vaccines can incite changes that enable diseases to escape their control. It's amazing that we can keep pointing to things that were like post-COVID clown world, all the science that found all the same thing, and suddenly it's like, no, that's all fake news now because we've just changed it because it works for our narrative. And trust the science, right? May 10th, 2018. Yes, this is what's happening, guys. This is what's happening. And you combine that with ones that are allowing transmission. And top of that, it's just a perfect recipe for variants. And your natural immunity is helping you in that regard. And the people that don't have that, who are just taking the injection for the earlier variant that's no longer even part of what we're dealing with, according to their narrative, aren't. And they're struggling. Pretty obvious. And that's why we see things like this in Cornell. Despite 95%, this is one of those other microcosms, 95% vaccination rate in Cornell, yet Cornell today has 5 times more COVID cases than it did this time last year. Hard to miss stuff like that. Now, one last point I wanted to make, and actually, you know what I'm going to do real quick just for the sake of continuity, because I want to talk about natural immunity real quick. I'm just going to push this down one. So keeping natural immunity in mind with what we just discussed and the idea that that's the point is that that is keeping these people safe with natural immunity, according to what they're telling you, the science anyway. And they're forcing it on people, and that's creating the variants based on all the peer-reviewed science. Here is another. I'm not going to go through all the things I've already included. Hopefully you can just find, I've done endless, nonstop compilations of the many different studies from Nature, from the Lancet, from NIH themselves, from all sorts of other peer-reviewed publications telling you that natural immunity is robust, it's lasting, and you know, that it's T-cell, that it's memory B, it's all of it. This combines most of them, and it's a meta-analysis of all these peer-reviewed studies, and it finds exactly what we keep telling you. I mean, look at all the PhD. Okay, doesn't mean it's guaranteed to be accurate. They could be wrong, they could be lying. But the point is that the way the media pushes this stuff, that's how they, well, they, these are experts, so blindly trust them, right? This is a meta-analysis on September 7th, 2021. The prevalence of adaptive immunity to COVID-19 and reinfection after recovery, a comprehensive systematic review and meta-analysis of 12,011,447 individuals. You know, a little small study, you know. Here's what it says. 54 studies from 18 countries with a total of over 12 million people followed up to 8 months after recovery were included. Now, it's important to remember that that's where the study data ends, because that's as far as they went. It doesn't mean that after 8 months, it's no longer there, because we've already shown you all the other ones that continue to show you that it lasts possibly the rest of your lifetime. Right, I might as well just do that one. There it is. This is the Nature study that makes that clear. You'll probably make antibodies for a lifetime. The other Nature one I've showed in the past also makes it clear that that's not just antibodies. It's it's all of it, all the ones you need. But going forward, it says at 6 to 8 months after recovery from natural encounter with the COVID-19 virus, you know, that's what they're telling us, the prevalence of SARS-CoV-2 specific immunological memory remained high. 90.4%. CD4 plus, we just talked about that, 91%. Memory B cells, 80.6%. And the pooled prevalence of reinfection was 0.2%. 0.2. I mean, that is outstandingly better than what we're seeing right now with the injection. And it says individuals previously infected with SARS-CoV-2 had 81% reduction in odds of reinfection. Now, guys, all of this includes all the stuff. This includes all the stuff we were just talking about. And I hope you will take the time to read through this for interest of time. I've already made this point 100 times over. But the conclusion goes on to say around 90% of people previously infected with SARS-CoV-2 had evidence of immunological memory to SARS-CoV-2, which was sustained for at least 6 to 8 months, because that's where they ended the study after 8 months, after recovery, and had a low risk of reinfection. And this will be dismissed. They'll continue to act like this as well. We don't know. And the evidence suggests that it wanes after 3 months, which is what they keep lying about. That's what we're seeing with the injection. This is obvious. And if you actually look at the studies and all the information that I've included 100 times over, this is Nature, the Lancet, the NIH, they all tell you that you have it, you could potentially lasting for the rest of your life. And the WHO, in their own study about this, puts the number for who has it at potentially 99%. That's the WHO. Again, I'm not saying that in the sense that means you should listen to them. It's because that's who they tell you to listen to. So I'm baffled that they can state that, and yet they still ignore it. This is absolutely mind-boggling. But what I keep pointing out, oh, by the way, this is the link that it should be on, but here's the Wayback Machine. I keep pointing this out on the St. Louis government website. Now, I want to make this point clear, by the way. I pointed this out during a discussion of quarantines, and I made this as a side point. But what's important to remember, that on this Wayback Machine archived version of this page that they removed immediately after my show, it very clearly points out, under the definitions at the bottom, that what the definition of fully vaccinated person actually is anything before 13 days or before 14 days is still considered unvaccinated. And after 3 months from the last dose, you're also considered not fully vaccinated. 3 months. You think, why 3 months? Isn't that weird how it correlates with the Israeli data showing that after 3 months it begins to wane? Isn't that funny? It's almost like they knew it beforehand, right? However, not however, but I guess same thing. The point was, this was on multiple sites. I saw this multiple locations. I only had this one archived. And that's why I continue to show this for this point. But this was out there. This was out there until suddenly, I guess they didn't like what it said and they got pushed away and then they suddenly remove it. Now I'll actually show it to you really quickly, so it doesn't, you know, because it's weird. You see, I just copied the exact URL. What's strange is that it changes back to the one that you're going to see right there. Watch. Boop, right there. See? Pops back to this. Because you can, unless you have the link saved, it removes it for you. Why would that be? Does St. Louis no longer care about Fourth Amendment quarantine isolation orders that we have a right to know about? Pretty telling, isn't it? But the overarching point is, if after 3 months you're no longer considered vaccinated, fully vaccinated, and they're already pushing boosters for that exact reason, and you potentially have any, you know, antibodies, T cell, memory B, all these things that last potentially the rest of your life, and all these studies are finding the same thing, and all the meta analysis of all of them are showing you that the majority do. What are we talking about? How is it possible this can be done if it's not a nefarious action? They need you to take this thing for some very clear reason, and they don't care about anything else. Now, a quick note, and I'm actually glad I put this after this. We kept seeing this discussion of metal and contaminated things in the Moderna vaccine, which is interesting. It's Moderna. Now it seems like it's being pushed all the way down to Pfizer, which, what do you know? I'm right again. When I told you, I shouldn't keep saying that. I'm not one to normally do that, but it's ridiculous how many times, right? I told you Pfizer was going to be the pick. That was my opinion at the time. And here we are. That was right in the beginning. But we saw the Japanese government pull these back for contamination. We've also seen people die. But it turns out they're reporting it was stainless steel. Now, maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's something else. Maybe that's what they want you to think it is. At the end of the day, doesn't this already vindicate all these people that were having things stick to them? At least give the possibility that that's what it could have been? Right? I'm not saying that's what it was or if it's all real. I mean, it doesn't even matter at this point in the context of what we're talking about. But it's crazy how the point, I guess, take away is how many things can be so aggressively dismissed. Like how that guy who's arguing ivermectin is dangerous can be censored because they're just like, anything ivermectin, get it out of here. Like, just censor it all because we're maniacs. Any discussion, objective or not, about whether things were sticking or whether there was something in there, were censored as fake news and dangerous. Well, here we are, getting valid information verified by the Japanese government that, in fact, there was something in there that could make that happen. I just find it ridiculous this keeps happening, and nobody in that side of the argument can reflect on how they're continuing still to blindly trust the narrative. But as it says, a third person in Japan has died after receiving a Moderna COVID-19 jab from a vaccine batch that was found to be contaminated with stainless steel. So they tell us. But it says the contamination received extra media attention after Japan's health ministry announced that two men, aged 38-30, had died in August within days of receiving the Moderna injection. And they suspended those lots. It says in the latest case, the 49-year-old man who was inoculated for the second time, August 11th, with Moderna, was found dead the following day. It says on Tuesday, Takeda and Moderna reiterated that the metallic particles would be unlikely to increase medical risk or cause adverse reactions beyond those at the local site of injection. And here is the safety data sheet for stainless steel and for other forms of metal in the same wheelhouse. And you'll find quite clearly that they not really, it says not hazardous according to criteria specified. Okay, you can read it for yourself. So the bottom line is, it doesn't seem to be something that's even really that dangerous. I mean, it's probably not healthy for you to put metal into your body. But, you know, the idea is that they did a lot of, I actually looked up other studies of like metal workers and, you know, all these different things. And it doesn't seem to be by and large something that's an immediate risk or that could kill you in 2 days. And even the Japanese government is saying that's not what did this. The metallic particles, as not sought after, wouldn't actually increase your risk. So then why are these people dropping dead after a couple of even shots? Was this a way to cover up that? I mean, who ultimately knows? But there's so much going on here that is so abstract and opaque, and all we get is trust the government. As this vindicates some other conspiracy theory, I mean, it blows my mind how this continues forward. Now, to finish here in regard to vaccine passports, vaccine mandates, despite what we just talked about today, despite everything else we've already shown you, for that matter, all the other things, all the other risks and all the blood clots and the, you know, all the other things that are absolutely, and even now neurological disorders, according to the EU, are very clearly possible from some of these injections, if not all of them. Here's where we are.
Pictures here now. Big crowds in stadiums. Not clear who was required to be vaccinated. Recommendations for masks. But as you can see in these pictures, Folks just weren't doing it.
Oh, God, no. Freedom? Oh, Fauci doesn't like freedom. You can't let them do those things without us telling them they can.
I mean, is this kind of behavior going to get us on the other side of this? Or if we keep doing this, are we going to be kind of stuck in outbreak mode?
Yeah, that's not a loaded, like, what a great journalistic question, right? Answer it exactly the way we want you to answer it.
Well, we could be stuck in outbreak mode, and that's why I think what you're going to be seeing, in addition to the fact that people are getting voluntarily vaccinated now on a more and more basis, as you said, we've been a couple of days, even over a million per day, I think you're going to see a lot more local mandates, Jim. I think they're going to be organizations, they're going to be universities, they're going to be colleges, they're going to be sports events, travel events, where the rule is going to be if you want to participate, you get vaccinated. If not, sorry, you're not going to be able to do it. And I think when we get more and more of that, I think we're going to start seeing a great diminution in the number of cases.
Listen, I get folks want to go.
Right. And so then you just ignore the fact that Malta made that obviously not the case. Israel proved that was obviously not the case. In an opposite way, Sweden proved that's obviously not the case. Yeah, but who cares about the facts, right? Let's just drive in the narrative and say that you're all bad people, because that's apparently all that matters today.
Back to normal life. They want to go to games, right? I want to go to games. But when you look at crowds like that, do you approve of that? Or is that just not smart?
I mean, what a dumb question.
It's like the same question from another angle. These people are ridiculous.
No, I don't think it's smart. I think when you're dealing particularly outdoors is always better than indoors. But even when you have such a congregate.
Hold on, I just have to point this out. Small thing, but it kind of just made me chuckle. I didn't notice it before. Watch how he responds when Fauci agrees with his really ridiculous repetitive comment about, do you agree with the thing that you literally just said we shouldn't be doing, right? Watch his nod like, oh, good, you agree with me.
No, I don't think it's smart. I think when you're dealing particularly in, if you know.
Yeah, I knew it, right? It's just so funny.
It's better than indoors, but even when you have such a congregate setting of people close together, first, you should be vaccinated. And when you do have congregate settings, particularly indoors, you should be wearing a mask.
Right. So a vaccine that we just showed you is clearly not stopping it, that your own data now admits the Delta variant is basically vaccine resistant. The Lambda variant is basically vaccine resistant. That Mu seems to be increasingly vaccine resistant. This is all their data. This is what they're saying. And here he is going, get the vaccine, because the thing that doesn't stop the vaccine will stop everybody from spreading it, even though they still spread it, catch it, have the viral load, all the data we've shown you. But just take that thing because science, right? Baffling. Really, really, really crazy. But this is where this continues to go. You're going to see a lot more mandates. If the rule is going to be, if you want to participate, you get vaccinated. If not, sorry, you're not going to be able to. Hold on, there was something he said there.
Or if we keep doing this, are we big mode? And that's why I think what you're going to be seeing, in addition to the fact that where people are getting voluntarily vaccinated now on a more and more basis, as you said, we've been a couple of days, even over a million.
Oh, that's what it was. I'm glad I looked at that. I wanted to make a point really quickly about this in regard to what Fauci's talking about right now. So he's claiming that, you know, oh my gosh, these days, it's just overwhelming, almost a million. Guys, that is not happening. This has gone up by what, 0.2? Right there, 0.2. This is going up by a very small amount, which 0.2 is a lot in the context of the whole country. But my point is, the way he's saying that makes it sound like a lot's happening. This is barely moving, point something maybe a day. I said this before, though. Think about how crazy that is, despite all of the pressure. People are being threatened to lose their jobs. I mean, most of the people on this almost 50%, 46.2%, are people that are invested in some way or another that are being forced to get it, with a job, to be able to visit their kids, right? And they're digging their heels in. Almost half of this country, and despite being coerced and attacked and threatened and disparaged and insulted and then bribed, here's money, here's college money, here's ice cream, here's food, here's beer, good God. And yet, they're still not doing it. But Fauci damn near, he really wants you to think that, oh, you're the only one out there not doing it. Like, that's not part of the agenda. Don't forget, the world, 29%. Now, here is what's happening in some of these mandates that he's talking about, right? So Syrian girl shares this. Police beat a woman who tried to go shopping at the mall without a vaccine passport. Now,
the as far as I can tell, the full context is my, which is just as crazy, is this person was part of a protest at the mall, not just because he said this, but this is by and large what seems to be the case. There was a massive protest of people that went in choosing not to like violate the rule, right? It's a protest to show them that they don't have to, because they don't have to. Vaccine passports, and it says not the only way to enter. You can also get a negative test, right? As if that's a choice, right? You have to pay for something every other day that constantly jams something into your nose. It's not, you know, and by the way, that doesn't even actually apply in most of the cases, despite how they keep saying that. Regardless of any of that, as if he thinks that makes it any better, watch what happens to these people. Watch the way these police rush in like this is literally a terrorist act, which probably is how they're trying to frame this. I mean, just right out of the gate. I mean, did any one of them even remotely fight back? I mean, they're not even swinging and they're just wailing on their legs. Like that's not new. We've seen the Macron government do this with the yellow vests. They're wildly violating the norms of everything. They don't care. Right? These places have become complete totalitarian hellholes, and that's not because of the people. It's because of the government. Their democracy, the illusion of what it was, is gone. And it's happening to us too. Americans just can't seem to wrap their minds around it.
Uh-oh, look at that. That one woman doesn't have a mask on right there. What disgusting hypocrites. Good God.
Jeez. There it goes. Great. So a protester exercising their rights, and then a journalist trying to cover that also gets attacked, right? Because freedom, you know, because safety. Anybody out there that thinks this is okay is a terrible person. I mean, or, you know, doesn't really care about anything they pretend they care about unless this is all they care about. And the ACLU, of course, is not fighting for you whatsoever, which shouldn't surprise you at all. Here's what they said about these mandates. Far from compromising them, get this, the ACLU says vaccine mandates actually further civil liberties. This is not the Onion. This is not the Babylon Bee. This is the ACLU telling you that a civil right liberties violating concept is actually increasing your rights. Why? Because they protect the most vulnerable. Now, wait a minute. That doesn't even make sense. Protecting vulnerable does in no way increase your civil liberties. People with disabilities and fragile immune systems, children too young to be vaccinated, and communities of color hit hard by disease. Okay, so mandates protect vulnerable people, and these ridiculous people are saying that increases civil liberties? I don't have no words for that. We are in a place where we've already talked about how facts don't seem to matter anymore in regard to the scientific research and what they pretend they're trusting, but this doesn't even make sense, right? Mandatory quarantine lockdowns increase your freedom because we say so. Same difference. There is no reason that adds up, but people will gobble it up because the ACLU, who fights for your rights, tells you you're dumb. Well, we're clear, don't forget that the ACLU in Washington has continued to be funded by Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Google, Microsoft, and Wells Fargo, amongst others. You know, all those fantastic people fighting for your freedom. Totally adds up, doesn't it? Well, here's Australia's premier telling you when we open up at 70% double doses, it will be only for those who are vaccinated.
Right. So now the opening up of the lockdown is completely contingent on people getting both injections, even though by the time they reach that 70, they'll probably already be giving most boosters. So it won't even happen then. But the point is, it's only going to be for those who are injected, despite the fact that those people can still spread it. They can still catch it, stay viral load, on and on and on, and just round and round we go. But they don't care because it's all about compliance.
Rest with each other will be when we do open up at 70% double dose. Anyone who interacts with each other will be completely vaccinated. So that massively reduces the chance of anybody requiring hospitalization.
Don't you love that?
Massively reduces the chance, which, by the way, we just showed you the stats that very clearly imply that that's not massively reduced in any way, in fact. But she right there implied, well, yeah, there's going to be some people. Like, if their argument is that, yes, well, of course, some people, vaccines aren't perfect. Okay. Well, if that's the argument, and also based on this study we just showed you that says imperfect ones that keep transmission going can lead to variant. Okay. So they're telling you that's the case. It's not perfect. We can still spread it, but it's less and it will decrease the amount. But if you still have people spreading it and they're the ones that are able to create this, well, what does it matter? It's going to continue to create the problem and you're going to continue to argue with new variants, new boosters, and on and on and on. Well, exactly. Maybe that's the point. But meanwhile, those over here that have refused to take the thing that we're desperate to get in your arm will keep you on lockdown wearing masks and being tested constantly until you're so frustrated that you just give in, which we just talked about that coercion chart, which is right in there. It's exactly in line with what they use to manipulate abusive spouses or what a person would use to abuse somebody or manipulate them. Here is another member of the Australian government telling you quite clearly that you, if not playing your part in their illusion, won't be able to interact with their economy going forward. Oh, but that's fake news, though, I thought, right? But apparently not unless it's stated, not until they're allowed to say it. But we've been censored for pointing this exactly out.
Our nurses have to do, as this becomes absolutely a pandemic of the unvaccinated, and
false.
We open everything up.
False.
It's not going to be safe for people who are not vaccinated to be roaming around the place, spreading the virus. That's what they'll be doing. So.
Right. Again, does he not know that the vaccinated people are the ones predominantly spreading in Israel right now, or does he just not care? This is them pulling narrative from like the beginning of 2021 and just pretending like nothing else has happened.
So there's every reason to get vaccinated. And there are appointments available, and there'll be even more appointments available throughout September, October.
Now, again, the point I should make continuously here is that they're telling you, so if you're a 25-year-old with basically zero risk, 19-year-old with zero, one in a million chance, you have to get this or you cannot participate. Natural immunity does not even play a factor. This is the biggest criminal act in history. This is so much, like 9/11 is obviously something that's, in my mind, I mean, this is part two. I keep saying that. But this is clearly just criminal in every possible way.
Over November, let's get to those thresholds as fast as we possibly can. But yes, there's going to be a vaccinated economy. And you get to participate in that if you are vaccinated for safety.
Yeah, right there, right out of the horse's mouth, right? A vaccinated economy that you will get to participate in if you join the club. Otherwise, you don't get to join anything. Ever. California nurse shortages reaches crisis level as vaccine mandate wards off traveling nurses. Okay, so here we are saying nobody can do anything until they get this thing. Meanwhile, we're screaming about how we don't have enough nurses and we're overwhelmed and we're firing nurses and stopping them from going to work because they don't get something that they literally don't need in most cases. Talk about a self-fulfilling prophecy. Here he is again.
From a situation where to protect the health system, we've got everybody locked down. We're going to move to a situation where to protect the health system, we're going to lock out people who are not vaccinated and can be.
That's, you know, and again, this gets into the point where they decide what you're saying. Like they decide whether you're, what's the word they used? Sincerely having a religious belief, right? So they say, well, who can get, but are choosing not to. Okay, so they decide if your religious exemption is choice or if it's real, which is insulting and in fact illegal in a lot of ways. But regardless, the bottom line is you have the choice. And they're telling you right there that exercising that choice, they keep pretending you have because we're not forcing anybody. At least the U.S. keeps doing that game, right? We're not telling you. You can have the choice. You just don't get to go in the restaurants. Okay, well, clearly not. Because what he's telling you right here is that we are locking you out of everything if you do not do this. You don't have that choice. That's very clear. And it's been clear from the beginning. No was never on the table. Because he's telling you that you are having the opportunity to and choosing not to. And as he goes on, he tells you that's bad. That you're a bad person for doing that. So choice was never on the table. And they're now finally admitting that.
If you're making the choice not to get vaccinated, then you're making the wrong choice. You're making the wrong choice. And for safety's sake, and for the back to that point about how much work our nurses have to do, as this becomes absolutely a pandemic of the unvaccinated and we open everything up, it's not going to be safe for people who are not vaccinated to be roaming around the place spreading the virus. That's what they'll be, doing.
So same clip here. Let me jump ahead.
More people who want to get vaccinated than we actually can get through the system. Wait, that you get to participate in that if you are vaccinated. Now, that's not right now because, of course, there's many more people who want to get vaccinated than we actually can get through the system. But we're going to get to a point where everybody who can get vaccinated will have been offered the chance to do so. And we are not going to have a situation, well, at least not in Victoria, where we lock the whole place down to protect people who won't protect themselves. These go and get vaccinated. There's 11,000 AZ appointments available this week, 2,000 Pfizer appointments available this week. We'll have more to say with those additional stocks coming in from overseas, but I want to run that down to zero so there are no more AstraZeneca appointments, hopefully very soon, and we can order more and we can keep pushing that. I just again remind people, the Prime Minister has written to everybody who's 60 and over and indicated to them that you are eligible for AstraZeneca. And if you want Pfizer, then you will be in the queue behind everyone else. That is to say, you'll be in the queue behind 12-year-olds because they can only get Pfizer.
God, that's disgusting. Absolutely disgusting based on everything we just showed you. And that risk is for everybody, but children especially. But, you know, by the way, in Australia, they're already doing the mix and match right now. People who got AstraZeneca 1 are coming back and getting Pfizer. I mean, it's off the rails. It doesn't even matter. Trust science, but we'll do whatever we want. Now, I want to make a quick point about the Australia being accessible. Somebody pointed this out to me. Now, I've made the point before of people having access to this. Now, there's plenty of Australians that have told me that not everybody's had the ability to. Now, I made this argument from the beginning in the United States. It's my belief that this is an illusion, that the US did the same thing and it was obviously not true. And I made that very clear. Now, I could be wrong, but I believe that there's been plenty of time where this has been offered, where people are refusing to do it. And they keep pretending like, no, we just haven't gotten to everybody yet. So it appears as if it's their fault and not the fact that people are saying no. I could be wrong, but I wanted to make that valid point for somebody from Australia who points it out, because from their perception, it would be the argument, not everybody's had the opportunity yet, like he's saying. But it doesn't really matter, to be quite honest, because all of the information out there shows you that this is something that most people should be running screaming from. Here are the quarantine camps that were fake news in the beginning. Remember, that was completely a lie until suddenly they started happening. And here we are showing you these quarantine camps for people that are being forced in there against their will because they're told they were in contact with somebody.
Howard Springs near Darwin is held up as the gold standard of quarantine. Separate cabins, on-site testing, catering, and so far, no known breaches. But the Queensland government reckons it can do better.
This is going to be a great boost for our defence against the Delta virus.
I don't even know what she's saying right there. The Delta virus? Like that, I don't know. That sounded like she was very unclear about what she was about to say.
The cabinet has signed off on the WellCamp facility, first proposed 7 months ago. Businessman John Wagner will build it next door to his airport.
We will have the first 500 beds operational before Christmas.
The state government will lease it and run it. The cost to taxpayers is being kept under wraps.
That's great.
So you're not kept under wraps, whatever that means with government spending. Sure.
Fantastic value it will be if we can avoid just one lockdown.
The federal
government. That's the point they keep making, right? So they're now making it. It's your fault, right? If we can't get enough people to get in jail, we have to go back on lockdown, right? That's more. And by the way, what they just kind of backhandedly admitted to right there was that the lockdowns are the reason the economy struggles. We know that. Everybody knows that. But of course, they blame COVID-19. But listen to him again. Like, I love how this keeps happening, where they continue to admit things. Because like I say, when you lie about everything, you eventually get to step on a previous lie. And they keep telling you, no, COVID destroyed the economy. Well, no, the lockdowns did. The unnecessary lockdowns, especially in a place like Australia, where the deaths and cases were stupidly low.
Government will lease it and run it. The cost to taxpayers is being kept under wraps.
And you pay
for it. Fantastic value it will be if we can avoid just one lockdown.
The federal government's previously rejected the plan on grounds it's too far from a tertiary hospital. But the deputy premier's declared it
the perfect location.
Still, some old sticking points remain, like will international flights to Wellcamp be approved?
To Wellcamp. That's not alarming.
Well, we hope so. So we'll be continuing those discussions with the federal government. But we can bus people from Brisbane up here if we have to.
They could have done that months ago if that's what they wished to do. But good for them. And I wish them every success.
The Prime Minister was given no notice of today's announcement, nor Toowoomba's mayor.
Maybe a good thing for the economy in Toowoomba. But let's hope that there's no outbreaks, that there's no problems with it.
If they get on top of it early and if they plan it well, it could be a good thing.
Great. It could be good for the economy to imprison people based on an assumption that they're sick. Yeah, it could be great. Great economy booster. You know? Really? I can't even believe that. It's gross the way this is being rationalized. You know, the idea that this is normal.
International flights to Wellcamp be approved.
Well, we hope so. So we'll be continuing those discussions with the federal government.
The idea here is that these people are being pushed into the situation. And I think, you know, think about this for a second. You know, there's all these this talk about, you know, Uyghur like radicalization camps in China where they're trying to like re-education camps. You know, is that not what this is to a degree? Forcing people into a position where they have to sit there, you know, and half the people that are being forced in this position, maybe they don't believe it. Maybe they don't think they should be there. But while they're there, I promise you that they're being indoctrinated. So it's an interesting way that you can see how this could be influencing the direction. And while they're there, I can promise you that they're being aggressively forced into the concept of vaccination, especially if they're not. Very alarming. This is, you know, like I keep saying, coming to a state near you. Here is a video from the same thing, but a little more alarming. A video of an individual making this video from inside. He captures the daily life of the inmates inside one of the Australia's quarantine prisons. Quote, waiting patiently to be fed. It's like when you shake the bag of dog treats and the dogs come running. This is somebody in this camp.
Well, just waiting patiently to be fed. It's like when you shake the bag of dog treats and the dogs come running. We're all just outside waiting. Just had the cops come around and tell this woman off staying over here as well. Because there was about 5 seconds in between her taking a sip of her cup of tea and she took her face mask down. Cops came around literally on the dot and just pulled her up for it. And she said, well, I'm drinking my tea. And they said, well, not right now. You're not putting face mask on. It's a bit intense.
I don't know if you guys could hear that properly. It's pretty low, but he's basically just saying the neighbor across from him took her mask down to drink her tea, and the cops came in force to tell her she had to put her mask back on while she was drinking her tea. It's just irrational. Somebody in the chat just said that I can't confirm this, but somebody in the chat just said that the IMF loaned Tanzania $600 million. If that's true, it's pretty telling, I would say, seeing as how, you know, the whole, you know, all the different changeover power and the focus on the disappearing people and, you know, the weird things about being pro-COVID and not pro-COVID and the presidents that seem to be vanishing or dying. And, you know, and then suddenly we see these, you know, here's some money. It's the interesting correlations, but I'll look into that afterward to see if there's something to that. But going forward, here is what I keep pointing out. The Washington Post, again, for like the 30,000th time since this started, doctors should be allowed to give priority to vaccinated patients when resources are scarce. So regardless of what you think about what, you know, whether it's a bad person who doesn't get vaccinated, that's irrelevant. If you believe in the Hippocratic Oath, if you believe in the concept that, you know, a doctor shouldn't be making subjective choices about their political beliefs or even their medical beliefs about whether or not they treat somebody. So this is a person who's made a conscious choice about a medical intervention. You can disagree with that, but that's their belief. What if, and how about, what if they have a religious exemption? What if they're immunocompromised? These are all, these are separate and valid arguments that have nothing to do with not wanting the injection, but they're being lumped in because it's not, they're not saying anti-vax, they're saying people who aren't vaccinated. You see how this is, you're lumping in millions of Americans who just have no choice. Now, they don't care about that because they're, all they're trying to do is force you to get it who haven't. That's it. That's what this is about. And the doctors are actually arguing, and I've shown you many cases of this. And by the way, cases where it's literally already happening. I've shown you documentation about transplants being denied. I mean, it's all happening. And this is an egregious violation of what they're supposed to do. And by the way, as I showed you before, here's the June 25th version of that FDA document saying, you know, should you decide not to receive it, your medical, you, it will not change your standard medical care. Well, obviously that's a lie. And by the way, even the newer one, they updated it to, you know, after they added the EUA in there in a really deceptive, dishonest way, it still says, should you decide not to receive it, you will not change your medical care. But here are doctors who don't care about that. These are bad people who have been so hyped up on the virtue of something that they don't understand, apparently, that they're going to tell you, you have to get to the back of the line. Now, think about that. That is one of the 40% of the African-American people. Now, you see how this begins to get, see, very clearly represent discrimination. Well, this is where you get into the idea of HIPAA and ADA and all the stuff we talked about. This applies in a lot of ways, not just to your work, but in other circumstances. And they're very clearly violating a lot of this stuff. Now, to finish off, I think that was all of it. One more right there. To finish off, just a quick, another iteration, reiteration of what's happening in Australia, as well as a lot of places around the world. Australia, as we just told you, they debuted their Orwellian app using facial recognition. We just talked about this, and geolocation to enforce quarantine. So this is so they can call you every 15 minutes and you have to answer, show your face, make sure it's you, or you get a violation, right? Make sure they geolocate you while you're in the quarantine so that guy with the mask can't run away. But it's all about freedom and safety, you know. This is happening right now. And this is the technocratic future. If you believe this only has to do with the COVID-19 narrative, then you're missing a big part of this story. Now, on top of that, here's the part from today, or the third, but the one I'm reporting today. The Knesset has advanced their own bill to allow the same thing. What a coincidence. Quarantine monitoring via app. Now, this is the same concept. Now, this is clearly being argued because of people violating quarantine, even though the vaccinated are out there spreading it all the time and nobody seems to care about that. Here's what's happening in the U.S. too. Of course, in a different context, now totally not related to COVID-19, apparently, which we obviously know that I think that's what this is. August 19th from TechCrunch. Google says geofence warrants make up 1/4 of all the U.S. demands for warrants. Let that sink in. Now, just so we're clear, a geofence warrant, also known as is a search warrant issued by a court to allow law enforcement to search a database to find all active mobile devices within a particular geofence area. So they can use, you know, what would be the right word for it? Not just a database, but they would use central databases. You know, from big companies to search all these areas to find active mobile devices to in a particular geofence area to know where you are if they're looking for you. Your personal data, if you don't want that to be public. And they're using this with warrants, and it's up to 1/4 of all the U.S. demands for warrants. 1/4? Yeah, I guess that's why all those rape kits are still sitting on the shelves in all the police departments, because they clearly care about what's keeping you. I mean, there's a clear focus on what they're supposed to be enforcing in this country. Cannabis and vaccines, it seems today. But this is alarming for a lot of reasons, because this is the creation of the digital gulag that we keep talking about, that Corbett coined. They are already using this stuff, and this is already being built into the infrastructure, and this is already being used right now in Israel and in Australia, and by the way, the US. But if you think it's not being used in the context of COVID, then you're probably not paying attention to how obviously they use these things for other purposes while they tell you it's for something else. Apple says Arizona and Georgia will be the first to add state IDs to iPhones. What do you know? Weird how it's all happening so fast, isn't it? Just like we pointed out in Australia, how we showed you he was scanning his driver's license through the window. Here we are. Same damn thing. Digital identification. It's all going that direction for your safety and security. Of course, guys, of course. And totally, totally has absolutely nothing to do with the future that they're trying to build right in front of you and telling you what they're doing. The Internet of Bodies is here, guys. It's here. This is how it could change our lives. World Economic Forum, Forbes, they're all writing the same thing. It's all coming to you. The Internet of Bodies. Now, in case you forgot what that is, I'll play this clip on the way out yet again. Huh, it looks like we're suddenly having problems on Super U. I don't really know why that would be. Let me know if you guys are having a problem over there. Yeah, it looks like we're no longer live. That's fantastic. All right. Well, hopefully it didn't lose, you know, only part of it at the end. But to wrap this up at the end here, guys, thank you for being here and tuning in today. Just under 3 hours, not too long. But this is where this is going. Now, people have a hard time, it looks like, to some degree, kind of fitting these things together. Because there's more than enough to be concerned about just in what's currently happening with the injection push and the mRNA and, you know, all the problems therein. But really, we need to see that is an agenda in and of itself, but it's also a means to an end. The vaccine passports, the infrastructure for the next pandemic, right? That's how this is going to go. And then also next climate change push and whatever else they're going to use it for, which they already told you they're going to do. It builds into the infrastructure for the Great Reset, for the technocracy. And this is also not a secret. And I'll play the clip for you to watch as we play it out here. The Internet of Bodies is not some conspiracy theory, not some hypothetical thing. For those who watch the show, you saw me play this clip just a few days ago. But I figured play it on the way out because it's a good clip. And I think Spiro was the one that made this clip. But thank you for being here and continuing to question. And I mean, as I'm wearing my question everything t-shirt right here, make sure you question everything, guys, which again, on top of that is, but also be open to all possibilities. It's not dismissing things. It's just questioning them, researching, doing your due diligence, showing discernment. So thank you for continuing to fight. Please keep spreading this information to your friends, to your family, and to people you like and dislike alike. I didn't set that one up well. I love you guys. Thank you for being here as always. Oh, wait. Before I do that, I do this too often. I end up making sure that I want to make sure I have that clip. There it is. Make sure. So you don't have to wait, right? The last part. Question everything. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
They call it part of the fourth industrial revolution.
One of the features of this fourth industrial revolution is that it doesn't change what we are doing, but it changes us.
The very idea of human being some sort of natural concept is really going to change. Up until now, the conversation we've been having is around freedom of speech. Once we can access people's thoughts and access people's emotions.
The focus, as all of you know, today is on what's now called the Internet of Bodies, involving medical implants and other kinds of devices that go inside your body and all together with the internet as a whole comprise the Internet of Bodies.
The Internet of Bodies, or IOB, is actually an ecosystem. It's a bunch of devices that are connected to the internet that contain software and that either collect personal health data about you or can alter the body's function. We think of the Internet of Bodies as this collection of all these devices as well as all the data that the devices are gathering about you. And in healthcare, it's Internet of Bodies has been around for quite a while.
So the Internet of Bodies, imagine the power of AI. What is artificial intelligence? It's a way to automate computation and cognition. So we can now automate learning, perceiving, doing computation. It's a pervasive general purpose technology that will be used in all of our industries, that will come into our professional networks, our private networks, our schools, our industries and our offices. What I wanted to epitomize with the Internet of Bodies is this notion that we will be under assessment, we will be under measure of computation in every aspect of our lives in the future, from what you eat, who you date, what you buy on the internet, how much energy you use, but also what are your vital signs, how well are you doing in terms of health, what kind of specific genetic quirks do you have, what's your genome telling about your health, about your mental health, mm-hmm. about how well you are doing, how well you are aging, what kind of disease you are susceptible to.
It has a bit of an Orwellian twinge to it.
Well...